Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. Hopefully the mic is working this week. I've got two people here to see, just to make sure. Mom's here, and Elizabeth is here. Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Hi.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. I even messaged you. It was working.
Oh, yay. Very good. Okay, so better start of the show this week than last week. That's good. Well, hello. And so you're more than welcome to stay, Mom. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't have that 6 minutes of nothingness like we did last week. And Elizabeth is with us, too. Hello, hello.
Well, hello, darling. How are you? Hello, Carla.
Happy
Sunday to you. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might appreciate this, but I went through my empire of pickle juice in the refrigerator and consolidated all the jars and then made a salad. So it was a fantastic day in my house.
What exactly is an empire of pickle juice?
Oh, my gosh. I love pickles. But I will not ever throw a jar away if it's got pickle juice, because there's just a plethora of things you can do with pickle juice. It's so good. And it's like, it's a sin. It's a sin to throw it down the drain. And I was taught that from a young age, because it's like, it's just so good. I found out you can actually do cocktails. I'm like, what? Somebody
pickle juice cocktail?
Pickle juice back. With tequila, like a, and
what?
I'm like, well, only pussies need a back for anything. But I've never had that in my life. But it clears. It's just good stuff. And then I do refrigerator pickles, so I'll cut up my vegetables and put them in my pickle jars, and it's like, you know, twice the fun. So I have so many pickle jars in my refrigerator. It's like, there's no room for the food. And where is the food, by the way? It's somewhere in between the pickle jars. So that is what went on at my house. I don't know. Do you have something similar that you do with your fridge? Like things that you just, like, push to the back and you've got, like, 8 jelly jars or, I don't know.
Baking
that was mine
grease.
Was my pickle juice. Baking grease, there. Yeah, exactly. Well, you're rich. You've got baking grease. You're my rich friend.
I got 2 of them. I was thinking about starting a sausage grease one, too.
Hey, you know what? Anything. I've got, you know, and I'm going to have to, like, label my grease. We used to have it all in one, like a tomato soup tin, you know, with the label off on the stove, in the middle of the stove at my grandma's house. Every kind of grease went into that. And then you cook with that. And miraculously, none of us died from that. I myself have not been able to live like that. I put it in the fridge myself. But
yeah, right.
In the day,
my grandmother never
there.
Kept her refrigerator, and we didn't die. She kept
exactly.
It on the stove. Uh-huh. She kept it on the stove in a ceramic, you know, Pyrex container.
Yeah.
Yep. Never
needed
pyrated it.
Yeah.
So good. Okay. So let me just talk about what we're going to talk about today. So this week was the 1 year anniversary of the Ukrainian war. And yeah, so I've got a Tucker clip to play about that. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the East Palestine derailment / explosion and the follow-up to that. Ironically, they're blaming Trump for this, and Joy Behar got herself in a little bit of trouble trying to do that this week on The View. That's pretty much what I got for this week.
I heard tell that they're just not going to be happy people anymore because Roseanne's going to be on competition same time slot. And I'm like, now TV's getting good, but I'm still not going to pay for it. But Too funny.
Yeah.
Joy Behar. Lordy, lordy. So, well, you know, what would they do if Trump went away? who would they blame everything on? Who do you think? Who do you think? Who's the usual suspect, but who would be the next scapegoat?
I'm going to say Putin.
What do you think? Oh, that's too easy. Has to be in this country. Can't be far away. Can't be Superman.
Ted Cruz.
Who?
They will. Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, will they resurrect him? Will they let him into to the spotlight again? That poor man. That poor man does his little show, and I'm like, he's stuck all the way down to the end of all those watch again things.
Yeah.
Rudy, that would be good for him if you get a little bit of attention. I don't know, honestly.
So,
soccer mom?
I'd like to start by playing a clip. It's very quick. And, you know, the war is serious. War is, you know, no, I never support war. But there have been a couple moments of hilarity in this war. And I'd like to start by playing a quick clip from CNN. 3, 2, 1.
A little bit of chicken fried. Cold beer on Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right.
All right, that was it. That was the only funny moment of the whole war.
I remember when we supported Free Country. That your buddy of yours that came on.
Oh yeah.
That was a good show. Yeah, you know, it's so funny with this. I'm surprised that you were even going to go into the land of Zelensky, the Ukraine, because it's morphed from it was just such a soap opera kind of event that they wanted us to be, you know, the heartstrings and the nothing burgers, and it's like, and the yoga mats they were bringing out, yoga mats, when there was a little bit of, you know, something blew up, a car set on fire. It's like, this is wag dog stuff. And now it escalated to, you know, people are dying and being bombed. And it's like, you know, you would think, actually, in this day and age, you would think they wouldn't do conventional war anymore. You know, it would be more of a strategic drone strike on, you know, who's our enemy? Let's take them out and, you know, do a little more fine-tuned coup than to make all these people die and the buildings burn and all of this and the theatrics. Mm-hmm.
Well, right.
It still goes into the land of theatrics with this last, when you did that air horn, I thought it was the you know, coming to Poland to, do this Disneyland photo shoot with Zelensky when he should have been in Ohio. And it's like, yes, look at the balls our president has. He went into such a dangerous situation, spur of the moment, as if he didn't know what his handlers were taking him to the bathroom, and he ended up pulling. He didn't know what he was doing. But the photo ops and the craziness, and it's like, you know, the one thing that pisses me off is just like with Ohio, they keep going to, well, who's going to pay for this? Who cares who pays for it? Who's hurt? Yeah. What was the consequences? All they want to talk about is the money. The company's going to pay. No. Is that where the land where we exist? It's like, what about who's going to get sick and die from this? Is it dangerous? We don't care how much it costs. Money means nothing. The government blows it out of its ass every day. Money is free. But this thing with the war, why is this happening? Who had 30 biolabs running along the border of their country? Biolabs brought to you by the United States of America into, just let me put it where, you know, Mexico was invading Texas. And all of a sudden, instead of the border towns, you had, pop up bioweapons. We'd be like, What would it take to make the border dangerous that we would close it? Would it be bioweapons? I don't know. But that's what's going on there. And it's like that gets swept under the rug. They think that this is some kind of temper tantrum that this delusional old German-Russian man that has been around for way too long is having. And it's like, I don't know, it's just the propaganda of the whole thing is fascinating. And the silencing of really what's going on. I can't remember what, something I was going to post. It was actually an ad. I think it was an ad someone put out because they won't let us post it. It was a paid ad, and all it was a water fountain in a high school in Ohio that has a hazmat red bucket and a padlock on it. It's been biohazard lockdown. You can't use the water fountain at the high school. I was going to share that, and it was restricted.
Oh, geez.
We can't talk about that. That's how bad the censorship is. So, God forbid, can you imagine all the things that they missed on the geopolitical side of what might be World War III? Or
right.
We can't talk about a toxic train spill that's out of control and in all of our water. How many rivers?
No.
It's such a grand proportion. Oh, my gosh.
Well, okay, so we're going to talk about East Palestine, but I'd like to stick with the Ukrainian war first, and then we'll get to that next, if that's all right.
No worries.
So,
let me ask a question, Danielle.
Yeah.
Did you guys talk about the history of how this conflict started?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we have.
And you know that Victoria Nuland, she's still running around talking about how important it is for us to continue to send this money to Ukraine. Back in 2014, President Obama and Victoria Nuland created a regime change. They went in and they took out the duly elected, democratically elected government of Ukraine. And
yes.
That's, now, keep in mind, just like Elizabeth said, I would imagine they've been stepping around there for a very long time, but with the bioweapons labs, but she's still pushing this war this morning, Victoria Nuland, and she's an evil warmonger.
Yes.
I just wanted to make that point.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, the reason she has to do that is because the entire world is screaming at the top of their lungs for them to stop this nonsense because it's going to escalate into a fucking nuclear meltdown. You know,
yes, because
withdrawing from the treaty that says he will not, you know, this was the last arms deal of, you know, nuclear restraint, whatever he pulled out of it. Fuck you. Now he legally binding.
They were supposed to,
legally binding.
Well,
no more.
He pulled out of what?
He's made it so now he legally can never be held accountable for what he's going to do. The next step is, boom, you pushed me so far, he's going to start pushing buttons. The whole world knows this.
So
we're not hearing about that here. The rest of the world is like, what the fuck are you people doing? Stop it, for God's sake. And instead we've got the talking heads of our own illegal government that shouldn't be here, who's propagating an illegal war and immoral for their own monetary gains, and they got to shove it up our asses if it's something that's good.
So I just wanted to clarify something. They didn't pull out of the treaty, but it was called the START Treaty, and we've had it in place for the last 40 years with Russia. And every 10 years, they renegotiate. Yes.
He pulled out.
They renegotiate.
He canceled it.
Okay. Hold on, Elizabeth. That's not exactly true. This last week was the week they were supposed to, they renegotiate every 10 years, the START Treaty, and they didn't go back to the table to renegotiate with Russia. So in effect, yes, they pulled out of the START Treaty, but because they didn't go back.
No. This is systematically, he's pulled his Congress back in and signed documents so that legally he is following the rule of law. Every step of the way through this thing, this was the, okay, boom. No, he's done. The next step is he legally can start pushing buttons, and that's scaring the whole world, except for us. And they won't let us know. And instead, I don't know where you're getting this nonchalant, well, it would have happened anyways. No, this is some serious shit that's going on. It's unbelievable. And nobody's taking it serious. Not even these fucking
telegrams. I don't think, personally, I don't think that there's going to be a nuclear war. And the reason I say that is because there are other weapons that are more...
Worse. You know, this is not
what?
Going well. There's worse weapons than a nuclear war. They need.
Can I finish my thought,
please? Need to dial it back.
Okay.
I will stop.
Oh, that's okay. I know, you're energized. It's okay. I think everybody is about this topic. But I don't think they're going to be using nuclear weapons. I think they'll do something like turn the power off, you know, do an electromagnetic pulse, or they will do a directed energy weapon or something like that. Because I believe that Russia, after Chernobyl, was faced with the aftermath, and they're still facing it. It makes land unusable. And I don't really think in this time of environmental protection and all of these things, coupled with the fact that they've got so many other weapons that are worse, and, you know, that for the people, they could kill people, walk right into America and just take the land and use it for themselves. I don't think the point is going to be, you know, for war at this point is going to be, I think that there's going to be weapons that kills people, but preserves land. And I think that most, you know, countries, most powers know that, you know, even though there is a whole generation of people who are scared of dropping the bomb because we've been programmed that way, I honestly don't think that they're going to go that way. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I don't think that it's going to be, you know, I don't think they're going to complete. What's that?
It's not going to be pretty, whatever they say.
It's not going to be pretty, but I don't think it's going to be nuclear war. I don't think they're going to shoot a nuclear, you know, shoot a nuke into the Yellowstone volcano. I don't think they're going to do that.
No.
Yeah. You do have a very good point. We're dealing with somebody who actually is sane. Putin is a sane man. They make him out to be some crazy motherfucker, but he is smart enough and wise enough that he would not harm his own country with a nuclear fallout. I'm quite sure you're right on that point. But on the same token, they have, you know, nuclear subs have been deployed, and it's kind of like that. He keeps flexing his muscles, and we keep saying, oh, fuck you. We're making a matter and matter. We're going the wrong direction. The rest of the world is like, we want the keys to the car back. You're drunk. You can't drive anymore. And then we just keep going, la, 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 as we have these fucking talking heads on these Sunday shows. And nobody tells the truth or really what's going on or any other view, which is so dangerous. Your turn, Carla. I'm sorry.
It's fine, and to your point, though, both of you, I think Danielle's calling good money. There, again, another one of these pinhead freaking demonic globalists up on the stage at a World Federation, blah, blah, something, up on the stage saying that the only way to save the planet is to go back to a population of 500 years ago. So Danielle's point, I think you're correct. I think what they're trying to do is just depopulate because these people are, first of all, fucking demons. They're nuts, but that's what they want to do. They want to depopulate the planet because in their head that will, you know, they'll be God basically, and they know better than God what to do and how to supposedly protect this planet. So you're probably right. Whatever we may or may not be in for, and I have some of that in the good news report today about it's actually the COVID virus, which was part of their plan. So you said, Danielle, it won't be a nuclear war. It'll just be to get rid of some of the people. Oh, they started it, and then they put out the vax to get rid of a whole bunch more. So these people are demons.
What is it? What's that famous quote? This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper. That's very, very accurate.
Yeah. So, by the way, drink beer, don't buy don't drink Heineken anymore. So that'll be in the good news report.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry. Do you have the Jimmy Dore Tucker clip that I sent you?
I think I do.
It was a cool clip, and he's talking about this war, and if you have it up, I think it would be a great segue to what we're doing.
Let me see. I have the Tucker from this week, which is very good, but I'm pretty sure I was going to play it a couple weeks ago, and I didn't. Because we ran out of time.
Well, I sent you either in Telegram this morning or I texted it. It was on Twitchy, my Twitchy.
Yeah. Thing. I don't think I've got it downloaded. But let me just double check.
Well, you could play the one that you have.
Okay. Yeah, and then I'll either find it, the other one, or I will download it.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Tucker. That's from this. So this Tucker is from this week, and it's his warning about the Ukrainian war done on the 1-year anniversary. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. The war in Ukraine began a year ago today on February 24th, 2022, when the Russian military rolled across the eastern border of that country. But in many ways, the Russian invasion of Ukraine was the end point of a much longer story. The propaganda campaign designed to convince Americans to take sides in this conflict, a conflict that has nothing, strictly speaking, to do with them or with America, that effort began many years earlier. We'd peg it to July 22, 2016. That's the day that WikiLeaks published thousands of emails from the servers of the Democratic National Committee in Washington. Those emails proved that party officials had rigged the democratic process, the primary process, in favor of Hillary Clinton and against the insurgent populist candidate that year, Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Within days, the chair of the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, resigned in disgrace. The WikiLeaks scandal broke on the same day that Hillary Clinton chose her running mate, Senator Tim Kaine, and it overshadowed the nominating convention that followed. But more significantly, the WikiLeaks scandal threatened to split the Democratic Party into pieces. More than 13 million Bernie Sanders voters, many of them young people, learned that the process they had always believed in was in fact a sham. They had been cheated. Democratic leaders had to act quickly in the face of this to deflect blame from themselves onto someone else. The DNC's servers, they claimed, had been hacked by the Russian military. The goal was to hurt Hillary Clinton, whom the Russians feared for her strength and wisdom, and to help Donald Trump, whom they controlled. Russia hacked the servers in order to hack the election. That was their story. The Washington Post ran with it the first day as if it were true. But there was never any evidence that it was true. Almost 7 years later, there is still no evidence. The DNC's story about its servers is a lie. But as a political strategy, that lie worked flawlessly. Russia made the perfect villain. It was a white Christian country with a traditional social structure. It was everything the Democratic Party already opposed. The foreign policy apparatus in Washington was happy to hate Russia again. After 40 years of Cold War, hating Russia was muscle memory. So soon the leaders of both parties in Washington signed on to the Russia collusion hoax. It had the twin benefits of paralyzing the Trump administration, which it did, and justifying the expansion of the national security state. As the years passed and the rhetoric intensified, hysteria set in. After a while, anybody with a heterodox opinion, from right-wingers to avowed socialists, could be accused of working secretly for Vladimir Putin. Many were accused, and some were destroyed by it. It was a textbook witch hunt, far more effective than McCarthyism. And unlike McCarthyism, it never ended. Russia remained America's greatest enemy, even as China emerged as America's greatest threat. Over time, the lie that Democrats told to hide their crimes in the 2016 primaries came to dominate America's foreign policy and then to imperil America itself. For generations, statesmen and diplomats worked to prevent other great powers from aligning as a bloc against the U.S. The idea was pretty straightforward. You might be able to beat one strong country, but if a couple of strong countries ever got together, you would lose. This is why Richard Nixon went to China, to make sure the Chinese government didn't align with Brezhnev, with the Russians. Donald Trump understood this very clearly. Russia will never be our closest ally, he said. But if Russia ever becomes China's ally, we're in deep trouble. The combination of natural resources, military and economic power, and sheer population would make the Russian-Chinese alliance the most powerful force in the world. The United States would soon be dethroned. We'd be taking orders. As Trump put it, there is no reason to make Russia our enemy, and there are many reasons not to. It was a sound case, but official Washington ignored him. Their response shouted in unison, "Shut up, Putin stooge!" And then they set about trying to provoke a war with Russia. Now they have succeeded. But the war we're fighting in Ukraine is not against Russia alone, but also against Russia's newest ally, the People's Republic of China. What Donald Trump predicted has happened, and in the worst way. If the war in Ukraine continues, we will lose no matter how it ends. The world order is being reshuffled as we watch, and by the time it's over, the U.S. will no longer be at the top of the deck. That is very obvious to the rest of the world. But what's fascinating is how few Americans seem to understand what's happening or its consequences. But how would they know? No one in American politics or media will tell them the truth. Since the first hours after the invasion, Americans have been fed a steady diet of increasingly absurd lies about Ukraine. Google and Facebook have joined with the Biden administration to censor any factual information that contradicts the official storyline. It's dystopian. Joe Biden's first remarks about the war gave no hint that we would be sending advanced weapons systems and American military advisors to Ukraine, then supporting the entire Ukrainian government and its pension system with hundreds of billions of U.S. tax dollars. No, Joe Biden mentioned only sanctions, which are free. Sanctions, he suggested, would be enough. Here is Joe Biden a year ago today.
The Russian military has begun a brutal assault on the people of Ukraine. Without provocation, without justification, without necessity, this aggression cannot go unanswered. If it did, the consequences for America would be much worse. America stands up to bullies. We stand up for freedom. Putin is the aggressor. Putin chose this war, and now he and his country will bear the consequences. Today, I'm authorizing additional strong sanctions.
Strong sanctions, that'll do it. Now, the goal at that point a year ago today, you may remember this, was to push Russian forces back into their own country to reverse the invasion. And that seemed reasonable to most people. It did not seem like the beginning of a Third World War. Oh, but it was exactly that. And by December, Lindsey Graham was confident enough to say so out loud. Here he is.
How did this war end? When Russia breaks and they take Putin out, anything short of that, the war is going to continue. To ask the Ukrainians to give Russia part of their country after all this death and destruction is not going to happen. To signal a ceasefire, Russia will take the opportunity to rearm and come at them again. So we're in it to win it, and the only way you're going to win it is to break the Russian military and have somebody in Russia take Putin out.
So we're going to, says Lindsey Graham confidently, continue pouring billions into Ukraine until they, quote, take Putin out. Does Putin know this? Well, we have no idea. We're not allowed to see Russian media in this country. That's too much information for Americans to handle. But if Putin does know that we plan to kill him, wouldn't he fight back with nuclear weapons? Why wouldn't he fight back with nuclear weapons? No one in the United States seems to be allowed to wonder that, much less have a conversation about it out loud. Instead, we're treated to more lectures about democracy. Ukraine is a democracy, we're told. That's why we're on the side of Ukraine. The problem is that is a lie. Ukraine is not a democracy. Ukraine is a corrupt one-party state. Ukraine has none of the freedoms that define democratic governance: freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. Ukraine is the least free place in all of Europe, and probably for that reason, it is Joe Biden's favorite place. So for those who understand what is actually happening and what Ukraine is actually like, it is very frustrating to watch Biden say this again and again. It is galling to be lectured about democracy by a man who took power in an election so sketchy that many Americans don't believe it was even real. Joe Biden has never had the majority of American support for a single day of the Ukraine war. In fact, Joe Biden is far less popular in the United States than Vladimir Putin is in Russia. That is not an endorsement of Putin, it's just true. And it says everything about Joe Biden's tenuous legitimacy. Democracy? Please. We're adults. Stop lying to us. So what happens next in this war? Well, according to our elderly Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, the war in Ukraine will go on forever, and so will our support for Zelensky.
Let me make clear, the United States and the allies, our support for Ukraine will be lasting and is unconditional.
Unconditional support for Ukraine. Unconditional support for a nation most Americans know nothing about and couldn't find on a map. Unconditional support. That's a profound statement. Outside of your immediate family, how many people would you pledge unconditional support to? How many countries would you pledge unconditional support to? This is insane when you think about it. But the people in charge of this disaster aren't thinking the way that most Americans do. The Atlantic Magazine commemorated the anniversary of the war by commissioning a piece today by Tom Nichols. Nichols is a thoroughly silly foreign policy establishment parasite who apparently is taken seriously by other ne'er-do-wells and dumb people in Washington. But the piece is fascinating. In it, he inadvertently reveals the point of this war in the clearest possible terms. Quote, "Now we are faced with the long grind of defeating Moscow's armies and eventually rebuilding a better world." Oh, defeating Moscow's armies and building a better world? Perfect. Thank you, Tom Nichols, adding those items to this week's to-do list. Unspecified in the piece is exactly how we plan to do this, how we plan to defeat Russia and its ally China and then build utopia. The piece is notably light on details. Now, you'd feel a little better hearing all this if Tom Nichols and others like him in Washington had a track record that suggested they could do any of this, a track record of competence and success. They don't. Nichols himself seems to spend most of his life arguing with other people on Twitter. He's never achieved anything at all that we're aware of. But then virtually none of them have achieved anything. Biden's chief Ukraine strategist, Toria Nuland, you would not hire her to plan spring break. She couldn't do it. She doesn't have the skills. Now, these very same people, these demonstrably incompetent people, say they plan to rebuild a better world. All right, that seems ambitious. How about starting with Baltimore? Before moving on to total global transformation, shouldn't we fix the biggest city in Maryland first? Under the leadership of people like Tom Nichols and Toria Nuland, neoliberal geniuses with grand plans, Baltimore has devolved into third world chaos. But then so has Iraq, and so has Libya, and so has every other place these people have decided to, quote, rebuild. It should spur a moment of silence and self-reflection in the U.S. State Department that the moment Western diplomats and NGOs left the country, Afghanistan got safer. There are far fewer killings in Kabul now than there were 18 months ago. Pedestrians in Kabul can walk to dinner at night without being murdered. Now, that fact doesn't tell the whole story of Afghanistan, of course, but we shouldn't ignore that fact. It means something. If you spend billions trying to make a place better and it gets worse, you have an obligation to think about why. Maybe you're doing it wrong. Maybe you're not as powerful and clever as you thought you were. Maybe there's a problem with your formula. But none of this ever occurs to people like Tom Nichols and Toria Nuland, and for that matter, Joe Biden. The more discredited they are, the more self-confident they become. They see every failure as evidence that their talents are more desperately needed than ever. What is this? Well, it's called hubris. Hubris is the delusion that causes people to mistake themselves for God. They imagine they have power and wisdom and foresight they don't actually possess, that no human does. Hubris is a species of mental illness. These people are unwell. They're crazy. And there's nothing more dangerous than that. Hubris has caused more suffering than polio. It's caused more death than smallpox. And apparently, we're in the middle of another epidemic of it. Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly opens, stories that are changing the world and changing your life. I'm Tucker Carlson tonight.
Okay, I think that was a pretty good one. Other than the nuclear war stuff, like, I don't know, I thought he was from my generation, but I feel like there's still this, the trauma-based mind control that a certain generation has around nuclear weapons. And it just kind of impairs their ability to see what's actually in front of them. But other than that, I think everything he said was pretty spot on.
Interesting. Because we still have visions of, Hiroshima.
Right.
More so than paradise.
And the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Which was, it's funny that never came to be anything, but again, you had the pictures of Nagasaki and Hiroshima in the back of your mind. We could really do with these horrible weapons. I would just like to say that I don't think any of us would know the word hubris if it wasn't for the past 3 years. It's really become the word of the day.
I actually said that during the 2016 election that Hillary Clinton, her word was hubris. Like, she just had, because
I wasn't TV watcher back then.
But just look at the way that she handled everything, right? Like, we're going to win. It doesn't matter if we cheat, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be president, and that's what it is, and that's all there is.
Did they call her out? Did they bring back hubris back then, though?
Yes. Yeah, I did. I don't know. I don't know if I can say complete the first person who said it, but I know I used it all the time with her. Mom, I did find that clip, that Jimmy Dore Tucker Carlson clip. Now, this is the Jimmy Dore covering his clip on Tucker. But if you guys want, I can play that. It's not as long. It's only about 8 minutes. But are you guys good with that?
Yeah, it's good because he did a good job on Tucker Carlson. There was a whole day of war protests across the country. And Jimmy Dore participated in one of them, and Tucker had him on the show because of that, just kind of to set it up. But go ahead, play it.
Was this recently? Because the one I have was from 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw the clip.
Okay, well, let's see, and I'm sure it'll be informative anyway. So here we go, 3, 2, 1. Yeah.
So last night I went on this guy's show, Tucker Carlson's show, and it's nice. They send a van to the house. I don't even have to go in. So it's really convenient. And but they don't give – anyway, you know me, I worry about lighting. Anyway, Tucker especially has better lighting than me. But anyway, so I'll play it for you now because – and so I went on. It was perfect. So we're doing this anti-war rally on February 19th in at the Lincoln thing in the thing in D.C. And I forgot to mention it. I go on. He lets me talk. We're talking about war for 3 minutes straight. And I'm trying to remember all the stuff I wanted to say. And then I get to the end and I'm like, okay, I think I'll end it there. And then I thought he'd ask me one more question and I was going to look at my notes to make sure. And he didn't. He just blah, blah, blah. And that was it. And I was like, oh, I looked at my notes. Like, oh, fuck, I forgot to. If someone else had done that, I would never let them forget about it. I would so fucking bust their butt. You didn't talk about the thing. You're talking about
the gray zone when I brought up the great John Stewart Nazi medal article. I still feel bad I didn't bring it up. We posted. He had it on the screen.
Oh,
but we didn't. Think to say.
So anyway, so I'll just want to play. So I think this segment speaks for itself.
You can be outraged by the people running our country selling out our country to China, and you should be, but that's a very different thing from wanting to go to war with China, a war that we have no assurance we would win, to put it mildly. But in a memo to his troops, four-star Air Force General Mike Minahan wrote this, quote, "My gut tells me we will fight in 2025. Xi Jinping secured his third term and set his war council in October 2022. Taiwan's presidential elections are in 2024 and will offer Xi a reason. U.S. presidential elections are in 2024 and will offer Xi a distracted America. Xi's team, reason, and opportunity are all aligned for 2025. So what should we take of this? Again, you can be deeply skeptical, in fact, hostile toward China, and still be worried about going to war with China. Jimmy Dore is the host of the Jimmy Dore Show. He joins us tonight to assess. Jimmy, should we be paying attention to a memo like this? What do you think it means?
What I think it means is that the United States is trying to provoke and sabre-rattle with another nuclear power, right? This is what we were supposed to be afraid of was going to happen with Donald Trump, right? We couldn't have – he's a crazy man who's going to have his finger on the nuclear button, and now we have Demented Joe who is sabre-rattling with two nuclear powers, and they get the corporate media sponsored by the military-industrial complex to get Americans to cheer it on. And why do Americans cheer it on? Because they have no idea what's actually happening with their foreign policy, and what's worse right. – they have no idea that they have no idea but that they don't have any idea what's happening with their foreign policy. We have 400 military bases surrounding China since the Korean War. Do we really think that China is getting ready to invade the United States? Because I tell you, they're not. They make everything we use in the United States. Why? Because the same people who want this war are the same people who took the good jobs that are manufacturing jobs in America, turned them into low-paying, crappy jobs, and then shipped them to China, and then we get angry at them for the system that we set up if they're so corrupt. Because that's the thing. Americans have no idea how corrupt their government is. They think our government's just regular corrupt, like, oh, Trump gave his son a job or Biden gave his kid a no-show job in the Ukraine war. That's not – the whole thing is corrupt. The $800 billion military budget is $800 billion of corruption. Why do we have to have 800-900 military bases around? We're the ones provoking this war, just like we provoked the war in Ukraine. We are now provoking a war with China. And what? Who benefits? I'll tell you right now. Your enemy is not China. Your enemy is not Russia. Your enemy is the military-industrial complex, which has been fleecing this country to the tunes of hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars. How many times are we going to have a defense secretary say, hey, we can't account for $2 trillion in the Pentagon again, that like, which has happened twice now in my lifetime. So, again, people are being the war machine cannot be stopped. Who's running this country? The war machine. It certainly isn't Joe Biden making these decisions. I would like to know who is making the decisions. And I just want to remind everybody, the United States is the world's terrorist. We just set the Middle East on fire in the last 20 years, and now we're doing a proxy war in Ukraine, which we provoked, NATO provoked, and was just admitted that we provoked it by the former prime minister of Germany. And now we're trying to sabre rattle with China, and they're predicting a war. Again, China's not going to invade us. China's not our enemy. We might have an economic war. That's what these are. These are economic wars. These are wars right. for in Ukraine. It's about liquefied natural gas and making sure Germany and Russia never come together because we fear Russia's natural resources and manpower, and we fear them getting together with Germany with their technology and their capital. And so that's why we blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. That's why we're doing the Ukraine war. This is all about hegemony, imperialism, and economics. And if there's a Marine somewhere, it's there because they're about to steal some natural resources from another country. As everybody's screaming about what a bad guy Putin is for invading Ukraine, the United States is currently occupying a third of Syria. And which third is that? It's the third that has the oil. And how do I know we're there to steal their oil? Because the president of the United States said so.
we're not even benefiting economically. That's, I mean, of course, that's the rub. Jimmy Dore, appreciate it. Thank you. My pleasure.
I like to really drag. Oh, you can come to me. I like to really drag that out.
That's, well, I would have forgot to plug the mortgage as well, because that's a lot of. I don't know how you got that all out.
I don't know. I just start going. Anyway, so there it is. And by the way, I would love to say that stuff on MSNBC, CNN, ABC. They will never have me on. The only person in the whole corporate news that will have a message like that is a guy who hosts for Fox News and coincidentally has the number one news show in America.
I was going to say he has better ratings. Why would you go on the best rated one?
So I'm on the number one news show in America, and then I get to also go on the number one podcast in America or in the world.
In the world.
So I think it's okay. So thanks to Tucker for bringing me on and having that message to his audience, which needs to hear that China and Russia are not your enemy. They need to hear it. They got to hear it. And thanks for talking to let me say it.
Well, you know what's so funny is, like, they're not going to invade the United States. People are like, oh, if they invade Taiwan.
That's not invading the United States. Yeah,
we have to go. Taiwan, the United States, not me. No. The United States, it belongs to them.
It belongs to Taiwan.
So
I mean,
what are you
China.
Talking about? Yeah, to China.
Yeah.
I didn't know that we officially said that. This whole time, I've only heard they invade Taiwan.
It's one China policy. So that means the United States acknowledges that China owns that, that they're part of them.
There's a movie in China that's like their version of Rambo called Wolf Warrior. Okay, when it's a lot of stuff about like how they're nicer in Africa and then they fight a capitalist bad guy. And, but it looks like Rambo. It's just like how Rambo is. And they have a thing called Wolf Warrior Diplomacy, which is like when I think of that dippy general, all that thing he was saying, there's a bunch of politicians that are like that. And I watch a whole video about China has these Wolf Warrior diplomats. Like everything we say sounds exactly like what they say.
Yep.
The 2 years are going to have a war.
They're going to have a war.
They're going to have a blue water navy. Challenge us on the high seas.
A blue water navy.
That means they can leave the China area with their navy.
Navy. Hey, we're doing live stand-up comedy in Los Angeles, Tempe, Arizona, Palm Springs, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Nashville, Northampton, Massachusetts, and a lot more places. Go to jimmydore.com for a link for tickets and become a premium member while you're there. You get access to all of our stuff. See you then.
Was that the clip that you were talking about, Mom?
That is the clip I was talking about. So it's from 3 weeks ago. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been meaning to play it, but the show's just been so packed full of goodness that I didn't get around to it.
So that is the reason why I was so exercised about Victoria Nuland, because Jimmy Dore talked about it. I've been reading about it for months now. I have actually a little story that I wanted to read you, and it's about a gentleman named David Sachs, who is one of the people that I follow. It says, it talks about Donald Trump's criticism of Victoria Nuland's involvement in the ousting of Ukraine's democratically elected government in 2014. And Jimmy Dore talked about it on Tucker, about we're the reason why this shit happened to begin with. Mm-hmm. Nuland is the Fauci of this situation in the same way that Fauci is supposed to be protecting us from viruses. And then he funded gain-of-function research. Victoria Nuland was supposed to be our chief diplomat with respect to Russia and Eastern Europe. And what did she do instead? She ginned up this conflict by backing an insurrection in Ukraine. They brought in these Ukrainian far-right nationalists as the muscle. She was the State Department official who was responsible for backing this insurrection of a democratically elected leader in 2014. Ever since then, the relationship with the Russians over Ukraine has been heading south. If you're wondering why Putin seized Crimea, it was in direct retaliation for the coup that we backed in 2014. This is the origin of the conflict, and the fact that Trump is willing to talk about it is pretty incredible. So that Kanikoa the Great is another person that I follow on like everywhere I possibly can, on Truth Social, on Telegram, on Twitter, although I'm having some Twitter problems and it's Danielle's fault. But the truth is that they've been fomenting this since 2014 when Obama was president. So all of the crap that's happening now is because we backed a bunch of freaking Nazis in 2014, and they went in and took over this government, and Victoria Nuland, the demon that she is, because they wanted to be able to continue to play CIA base of operations for the garbage that we're doing all over the world. Obviously, I'm passionate about this topic.
And we did cover this, you know, several times, talking about even PBS back in the day was actually allowed to tell the truth on the in 2014 about what was going on and how Ukraine was training children in Nazi camps, you know, to be, you know, Nazi soldiers. And now all this, you know, now everybody just wants to ignore that and call it a conspiracy theory. But it's not like it wasn't too long ago that the mainstream media were allowed to talk about this stuff.
Right. And may not be tomorrow. Who knows? Depending on because they're not media. And I wish everybody would stop calling them that. They are a CIA operation, every single one of them, bought and paid for by corporations and our government.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Project Mockingbird.
That's who we're fighting against. That's right. That's who we're fighting against.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, passionate moment, Elizabeth, just like you. And it is good that we are passionate about these topics, and again, the good news always is there are a lot more of us than anyone realizes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so. We have about 10 minutes until the good news report. I want to give Elizabeth the last word on this, and then we can get into the the good news.
Okay, let's do it. We need to become crazy. Not crazy, but very, I mean, we need to have some passion. We need some action, some reaction to counterbalance out the mass apathy. No one seems to care. It's just like, la, la, la. You know, that's what makes us even more crazy, is that no one cares. This is important stuff. There will be a test. But, yeah, go ahead, Caroline, and give us some good news. We need it.
Okay, before we get started, I really want you to think about a good news theme song that we can play beforehand sometime in the next... Yeah, and it can't be something copyrighted, but some little jingle for the good news.
So we can't use Don't Worry, Be Happy?
I don't think so.
Oh, I can't stand that song.
It reminds me of my grandma.
Overdone. Okay, well, I guess have to come up with one for sure.
We'll have to brainstorm that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do it.
I didn't know
we'll
to do music.
Yes, we want something cheerful and happy. Okay, so we're starting off the good news report today by saying that California, the entire state, is no longer in a drought.
Woohoo!
And that... Yes, that is an amazing, incredible fact. We have been beaten about the head and shoulders here in California about water conservation, which, by the way, is a good idea to conserve water. Too bad the government isn't doing it. They've had millions of dollars, probably in the billions by now, to build, to conserve water, and they have let a bunch of frickin' environmentalist nut jobs stop us from conserving water. There, because of it, well, one of the lawsuits was about the Delta smelt. So do you guys know what a Delta smelt is?
I know what it was.
What was it?
It used to be a fish before, a tiny fish before it became extinct.
Already extinct. The Delta smelt was a bait fish, things that fishermen would use at the end of their hook or in a fishing trap to attract other fish. But because of the endangered Delta smelt, they have changed our entire water system here in California. As a matter of fact, whole great swaths of the Central Valley. Elizabeth, you live in the Midwest. What do you know about the Central Valley of California?
Not very much, but I do know about this water fight here. I hate to tell you, but they had a big expose on PBS, on NPR over this. And as I'm listening to it, I'm like, you know what? We need to, like, go back to the common sense of, if it's not livable where you live, maybe we need to relocate to livable places. And you cannot steal the entire water source from somebody from 5,000 miles away. That's my concern. I don't know what goes on there, but if you don't have enough water to maintain whatever you need, you can't take it from, you know.
We have plenty of water. We have plenty of water.
This is going on all over the place. And now no one has any water. I don't know if you are up on what's going on, but everyone's the five states that are taking from this tributary, it's almost like, well, now you've broken. The toy's broken. There's no water for anybody.
Well, but there's and that's, I think, what Mom's going to say in the rest of this story is that we've got plenty of water.
We have plenty of water, but we're not allowed to conserve it We're not allowed to build dams. We're not allowed to use waterways. We're not allowed to do anything with our water. It all runs off into the ocean because of environmentalists, okay? So we are limited to getting our water from far-reaching places, as you mm-hmm. say, but that's because they will not let us build places to store the water that we have or use the water that we have because of environmental concerns, quote, end quote. Okay, so they're lying.
Well, I wonder how soon that will end when you're not – that water source is gone. They're going to have to, like, scramble and reassess.
So let me
Which water source are you talking about, Elizabeth?
Okay.
The water, you guys are getting all your water siphoning off of the Colorado River, going down to Vegas, going down to Arizona, going down to you guys, and that is, it's not sustainable anymore.
Is that water sources don't end, just like oil doesn't end. That's a lie, okay? Because, first of all, because God, and it's recreated every year, every day, and so water sources don't end, okay? They are rivers, and they come from runoff from snow that happens every year, okay?
Well, when they start damming it, and they've screwed that whole thing up, the whole natural scheme of it.
Well, the problem here, Elizabeth, is that they won't let us dam our water. They won't let us conserve it.
In the near future, they might change their mind because the apparatus that they've taken getting used to using other states' waters, it's not going to be running. It's pretty much they've broken the earth, which was a sad story.
I just have to say, we did not have this kind of problem until they changed the laws about conserving water, about damming up water. You know, people keep saying California has no water. That's not true. We've got plenty of water. The problem is that the bureaucrats come in and the environmentalists come in and say, we have to save the Delta smelt, and we can't, so we're going to let billions of gallons of water flow into the ocean rather than conserve it for Californians, and then say we have to go get it from somewhere else.
And the funny thing with this is they're like, it's over, what is the term? The federal, over federal regulations. And that's what the problem is. And now they're turning that around to where they're blaming, they did blame Ohio on Trump because he did away with all these binding, choking federal laws and regulations that were stifling any thing from happening the way it should, such as your water flowing. They're demonizing that. They need to, you people live the way God intended without, you know,
there should be
no one in charge of water flowing from wherever. You should never take it upon yourself to stop the flow of a river. You know, you cannot play God on that. You know, and here we are damming this and damming that and screwing up your water flow and you can look, but you can't touch. That's what they're doing to you people there. It's insane. It's kind of like, go away from me. This is water for everyone.
All right. Well, so I'm going to get started on the news report. And that's what I wanted to say is that even though they will continue to tell us that there isn't any water, the snowpack is so big this year that we had one year before last that is going to take us out of this so-called drought, right? They won't be able to report that we are in a drought anymore, which makes me very happy. Along those lines, though, we've got about 2 inches of rain in one day, which is very typical for California. We go long times without any water, and then over the last month, we've gotten about 7 inches of rain, which is good news, except for it's causing some difficulty in our state to the point where they declared a state of emergency up in just past the Central Valley of California. We didn't get any of the emergency funds down here, which is kind of disappointing, but that's the good news is that we're no longer in a drought. So some of the stuff I want to talk about today is a story I touched on last week about Justin Trudeau. There are people that believe that he was elected for selected by the Chinese government. But apparently he's decided that he's going to rule out a public inquiry into the Chinese electoral interference into his election. And by doing that, he's guaranteed that people are definitely going to start digging. Some interesting information about the Clintons this week. It says a plane crash occurred right outside the Clinton Airport in Arkansas on the same exact day that they recycled a news story of a guy who had dirt on the Clintons dying of suicide in May. No survivors. Coincidence? So tragedy as five killed in plane crash near Clinton Airport. Witnesses hear a loud boom. On the same day, they released a story where Arkansas cops ruled suicide in death of Clinton aide linked to Jeffrey Epstein, who was found shot, tied to a tree with an electrical cord tied around his neck, and there was no weapon anywhere near him.
Clearly so, suicide.
The body count. Yes, oh, another Clinton.
A classic suicide. Yeah. Arkansas.
Yep.
Unreal.
Right. So
I'm kind of hoping that Tucker's going to pick up on this plane crash. This plane crash needs to get more traction. That's highly, highly damning.
Yep.
First, I thought it was a joke at first, and then it picked traction up, and then I saw it on the news. And I was like, not good. And I can't believe that people aren't saying, what? And maybe they are, and they're just silencing their voices. I don't know.
So you'll also be happy to know that Pfizer and BioNTech submitted supplemental biologics license applications to the U.S. FDA approval for the Omicron variant for 12 years old and older for a primary series or boosters. So it looks like they're going to get some more, they're going to kill some more folks, and we're going to let them do it. This really is good news. Anti-war protests in Washington, D.C. garner support of conservatives, libertarians, leftists. So there was a big love fest.
Sounds like unity to me.
Yes, it does. Stop the war in Ukraine. So that is excellent, excellent news that the media, in spite of all their efforts, if they're bringing people together, which Danielle always says, you start messing with people's kids, they're going to rise up. And for the fact that there was sort of political bent represented at this war rally makes me really, really, really pleased. So the rally speakers came from all political backgrounds, from the likes of conservative libertarian Ron Paul to Tulsi Gabbard to left-leaning war correspondent Chris Hedges to former Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein. The far left-leaning anti-war group Code Pink was also present, but their co-founder, Medea Benjamin, was pressured by her organization to drop off the speaker list because they were not comfortable with Medea Benjamin sharing a stage with right-wing personalities, which is kind of lame, but whatever.
Good Lord.
According to the rally press, the U.S. has instigated World War III in Ukraine. NATO and the U.S. are at war with nuclear superpower Russia. Countless thousands are being slaughtered for empire. Billions of taxpayer dollars are being torched at the altar of U.S. hegemony, the military-industrial complex, and a corrupt Congress. The doomsday clock is closer to midnight than ever before. Nuclear war threatens to kill nearly all life on Earth. So back to Danielle's point, I tend to agree with her. It doesn't mean that it isn't close.
I think the doomsday clock is a psyop in and of itself, but I digress.
We become so accustomed to it. I really wish where were these war rallies 20 years ago? You know, it's almost like we become so conditioned to just going to war, and it's a nobody even thinks twice about it. The death and carnage of actual people that are going to these wars are so prevalent, and they, you would have thought that when these boys came back and the country didn't take care of them, and you have nonstop commercials of, you know, wounded warriors, we would have said enough, and yet we haven't. So I'm very pleased that finally they've woken up and gotten a little moral compass.
I agree. And I mean, I was excited to read it. So I did want to just note that if you are a beer drinker, Bill Gates has bought a 3.76% stake in Heineken. And so if you do drink beer, I'm suggesting that you stop drinking Heineken, because I don't want to support anything that Bill Gates supports.
And God knows what he's putting in it, you know.
I think we know.
So we have another
Clinton side.
And you know what? I should have put these two stories together, and I'm really sorry that I didn't. This guy was a billionaire financier, Thomas H. Lee, 78 years old, shoots himself dead inside Fifth Avenue office, envy of Wall Street. He was a Harvard grad and friend of the Clintons, was worth approximately $2 billion. 78-year-old man. He was found dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound at his office in New York City. He was confirmed dead in a statement released by his family. He was 78 years old. Police responded to Lee's office, Fifth Avenue, around 11:10 a.m. His firm, Thomas H. Lee Capital LLC, is located on the sixth floor. The financier struck gold in his career by acquiring mid-sized companies, restoring their worth, and then selling them for wild profits. Yeah, I wonder how that happened. He was married, Anne Tannenbaum, so he leaves behind a wife and children, which is sad, but again, we can put another notch on the Arkansas belt. New York Post says the COVID lab leak is a scandal of media and government censorship, no kidding. The Wall Street Journal reports that the Energy Department now, which I don't understand, it, apparently all of the departments are supposed to say yes or no, whether it was a lab leak in order for us to believe it or something. I don't know. But now according to the Energy Department, and which maybe they're all doing their own investigations, and I don't know why the Energy Department would be doing that, but it seems kind of odd to me. It says that the Energy Department has concluded that the COVID pandemic most likely arose from a laboratory leak. The conclusion is reportedly based on a classified intelligence report recently provided to the White House and key members of Congress. Many will be exploring why the scientific evidence of a lab leak was so slow to emerge. Okay, pop quiz. Why was the evidence of a lab leak so slow to emerge?
Anthony Fauci. And
right,
China.
You win. Ding, ding. However, for my part, the most alarming aspect was the censorship, not the science.
Yep.
There will continue to be a debate over the origins of COVID-19, but now there will be a debate, which is has been the problem all along. For years, the media and government allied to treat anyone raising a lab theory as one of three possibilities, conspiracy theorists or racist conspiracy theorists. Okay? Academics joined this, yes, in marginalizing anyone raising the theory. One study cited the theory as an example of anti-Chinese racism and toxic white masculinity. As late as May 2021, the New York Times science and health reporter Apurava Mandavili was calling any mention of the lab theory as racist. She embodies the model of the new advocacy journalism at the Times. Reporters who remained wedded to the dated view of objective journalism were purged from the ranks of the Times long ago. Mandavili and others made clear that reporters covering the theory were COVID's little bull Connors. She tweeted wistfully, someday we will stop talking about the lab leak theory and maybe even admit it's racist. But alas, that day is not yet here. However, one former New York Times science editor, Nicholas Wade, chastised his former colleagues for ignoring the obvious evidence supporting a lab theory as well as Chinese efforts to arrest scientists and destroy evidence that could establish the origin. Others in academia quickly joined the bandwagon to assure the public that there was no scientific basis for their theory, leaving only racist or politics as the motivation behind the theory in early 2020.
Good Morning America is brought to you by Pfizer. CBS Health Watch.
Done. Sorry.
Whoops. It's okay.
No, I just wanted to...
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Yep. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Sort of relevant. Okay. Let's see. I think... What do I got here? More on the anti-war protests, which, again, made me very happy. I believe that in spite of what the media is trying to do, what they're trying to get away with, and push this war down our throats and continue to try to blow us all up or kill us all, because keep in mind that this is a cult. This is a religious movement for them, that the world population is too large and that they want to get rid of a whole bunch of us. And they're, if you keep paying attention, it's on all fronts. They're blowing up trains. They're sending out mass shooters. They're starting wars. They're pulling crap all – they're killing chickens. You know, if you looked at each one of them by itself, it wouldn't look like much. But if you look at them as a whole and you say to yourself, this seems targeted. This seems it's all on purpose. It's by design. And so I'm suggesting that every single person in this audience get some chickens. We have 24 in the incubator right now, and today we get to candle them. So let me explain what that means.
Ooh, fun.
And you put them in the incubator, right? So just like the mama hen, she collects a whole bunch. She lays, I don't know, a dozen eggs, for example. And keep in mind that that's 13 or 14 days of her collecting these eggs, right? So she doesn't start them going. She only collects them. She goes broody. And that means that she starts tucking them underneath her and pulling out her chest feathers. Her body temperature rises. And then after she gathers as many as she thinks is proper, then she starts to brood them. That means she raises the temperature of the eggs underneath her. She raises the humidity on the eggs underneath her. And then 21 days from that date, when she decides that it's time to start brooding these eggs, that 21 days from that, you pop out with however many little babies she's got underneath her. We'll say 12, okay? So when you put them in an incubator, pretending to be the mama, you have to set the temperature and you have to, and so they're gathered by whoever it is you get your eggs from. You have to set the temperature, you have to set the humidity, and they have to turn gently. It's kind of slow, it's kind of gentle, and of these eggs moving. So at about day 12, 10 or 12, you can take them out of the incubator. You don't want to handle them too much because the mama doesn't. And you put this light up against them, and you can look in there to see if there's actually a baby in there, and you can actually see the heartbeat and decide if you have what you call a viable egg.
I don't think I've ever seen a heartbeat, but here's what I see when I candled eggs before, and I had a pretty good hatch rate.
Yes, you did.
Is veins.
Yes.
That's what I thought. I look for things that look like veins. If they looked like veins, then it was more than likely a go.
There was an egg. There was a baby forming in there. Well, if you look at it carefully enough, and I've actually been learning how to do it, you can see a heartbeat in those veins. That's blood flowing in there. So tonight, when it gets,
can I ask a question?
Yes.
How is it you know which eggs that they want to keep as babies, and how do you know that you're not stealing eggs from them? Do they just stay on a bunch of them and the rest of them are yours?
Okay, so eggs?
Or?
That is actually a great question.
Sure is.
So every hen out in that coop will go broody, B-R-O-O-D-Y.
Although some breeds are more likely to go broody than others.
Yes, there are certain kinds of chickens that do it all the time. Okay, that's the first thing. So she decides, okay, if there's no rooster, she still tries to decide. Okay, so none of her eggs are fertilized because there's no boy. And she will start tucking them eggs underneath her. It's just her little clock says it's time to do it.
Yeah.
So to your
or
question,
they'll start hiding them. It's like really instinctual for them to say. So a lot of, honestly, like at the beginning of all the chicken farmers saying, well, I'm not getting any eggs. I'm like, find the nest. Because they're hiding them somewhere.
Right.
There's a nest somewhere that they'll, because they try to hide them. So that's what I thought was going on at the beginning of this, but it's just natural for them to want to hide them, but sorry, tough luck.
And she'll hide herself as well. She'll pick out a spot and says, this looks like a safe place to hatch my babies. And she'll start stealing eggs from the other hens. She will lay her own set of eggs and she'll tuck those eggs up underneath her wing and run over to the place where she's starting her little nest. I suppose your question is, does it hurt her feelings, kind of, Elizabeth, in a way? I think it does. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah, they'll bite you.
But she will fight you. That's the only time a hen will come after you is if she's gone broody. She makes this noise like, you ever heard one of those velociraptors when they show dinosaurs?
Mm-hmm.
That's the noise she makes. She makes this screechy, horrible, like, I'll
primal.
You. No, yeah, it's primal. Anyway, so tonight, when it gets dark, we're going to go in the little candle the eggs, and I will report back to you guys next week how many of them are potential. So this one's going to be a little bit of inside baseball. About 6-5 of them are Marans, M-A-R-A-N-S. The shell of these eggs are deep red. They look like a brick, only darker. So it's very difficult to see inside of these eggs because the shell is so dark. So
yeah,
I might not be able to report on all 24 of them. The other thing that I want to tell you is back from last week when I was reporting on the feed issue with people thinking that their feed was being poisoned. There's more evidence that that's true this week, and it's really, really concerning. Danielle has a cute little JP. What's his last name? JP what, Danielle?
Sears.
JP Sears. Can you play that?
Yes.
Yeah, I downloaded it. Hold on. I'll pull it up. JP.
Okay.
This is so funny. And it's quick. It's only 5 minutes. And I'm definitely going to post it in the chat because it is a better visual. And I'll put it in. I put it in our Seeds of Change chat. So if you guys want to watch along, because it really does have some really funny visuals.
It's so funny and so shadow man. It's a shame. He really is a warrior.
Oh my God. And I buy his stuff as often as I can. I've gotten like 4 tank tops of his.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Sorry, just one sec. I just want to make sure that I get this posted in the chat before.
No,
before, but in a, that'll take 10 seconds.
What brand is making this food? Is it Purina that's putting out this terrible food for the chickens?
Purina was one of them. The other one was, of course, Pop Quiz Elizabeth. I can't think of the other name, but it's a super popular brand of feed that most people buy. And,
Purina and what else?
Oh, God. That's I can't think of the name of the it's, Nutrina.
Oh, okay.
Nutrina.
Okay. That's it. I would stay clear for your dogs also. Purina is a big one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. It's up, so I'm going to play this. Okay. So here, and you guys watch along if you can. I sent it in our chat.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So watch along. So here we go. Three. Unless you want to cue it up, Elizabeth.
Three, two, one. I don't know. I can watch. I got it here, but I don't know.
You got it? Okay, yeah. So just keep, like, put it at the beginning. So,
I got it.
Because I'm going to play the audio, and it actually gives a lot. That's fine. Just mute it and start it over.
Oh, Lordy, God. Hold on. I'm disaster here. I'm going to have to mute. I'm leaving it for you, babe.
All right, yeah.
I only
so
know
I'm
how
start
to make
it soon. I'll start it soon, okay? Three, two, one.
Okay.
This is your brain. This is your brain on eggs. Any questions? Over 140 million hens have been killed. They've created a major egg shortage. So even though it's risky, I've gotten into egg dealing. Aside from killing all the chickens, they're literally doing everything in their power to rid the world of eggs. And the NIH has a food pyramid. Damn it. Trying to warn people of the dangers of eggs? The NIH has never been wrong about anything. As you can see, they rate Lucky Charms as twice as healthy as eggs. The government's basically doing a just say no to eggs push, but people want eggs. So I got into dealing eggs on the black market earlier this year. Business is a booming. Look at that. That's basically liquid gold right there in solid form. And the more egg production facilities the government destroys, the better it is for me. I get where they're coming from. The CIA just wants to protect the public. And if that means they need to destroy egg facilities, kill chickens, kill Kennedy, I get it. They're just doing their job. My customers want a potent product, so purity is everything in how I formulate it. These chickens are all free range. They eat organic feed, insects, and large branches all day. Do you know what that does for the omega-3 ratios in my product? People get hooked and will pay anything. I'll tell you one thing. Since we opened the borders of our country so we could let life-saving fentanyl flow in, one thing they didn't anticipate was all the omega-3s that would be coming over the border. This is my lab where I make my product. Dude, look at these things. Now, sometimes a batch will turn out with some of this greenish-brown stuff on it. I'm not really sure what that is. I think I know what it is now. I built my lab underneath this tree canopy. Helps keep it hidden from helicopters, always trying to take down operations like this. They're always trying to watch me.
That's him eating an egg.
You hear that? This thing's been following me all day. I don't have any moral dilemmas about selling eggs. I sell eggs to children. As you would expect, yes, there is violence in the egg dealing game. Just a couple days ago, I had a raccoon trying to interfere with my business. Let's just say you won't be seeing him no more. What you know about mealworm, with the egg shortage, I'm getting $15 for a dozen. Do you know how much I'm getting for two dozen? $30. Even though I'm heavily invested running my major egg cartel business, I think the government's doing the right thing, warning people of the dangers of eggs and promoting safe and effective food like Lucky Charms and fake meat. I don't want to see anyone destroy their life, but if they're going to use eggs, they got to buy them from someone. So why not me? If you'd like to get your freedom-loving hands on the latest freedom merch designs, check out the shop below right here on YouTube. Now call me crazy, but I care about people.
the rest is an ad, so we'll stop there. But I love him so much, and I think that if we ever start a business selling chicken eggs or chickens, we need to call it the Egg Cartel.
Yes, the Egg Cartel, absolutely. Although I already sell eggs, and I did not jack up the price. I am still selling them for $6 a dozen. I sold 2 dozen today. I sold.
Your insurance is going up. You have to up your price of eggs.
How much are you selling?
$6 a dozen.
Well,
that's California prices.
That's what I'm paying in Chicago. So I think you need to up it to
okay, Elizabeth, are yours organic? You know, I guess ours aren't organic anymore. They used to be organic free range, but we can't do that anymore.
Yeah, the food, organic.
They don't use the term free range anymore. Without pain. I can't remember. It's some ridiculous, like, we have not caused any pain to our animals. But, yeah, they are. They're the expensive, what we used to call the expensive eggs from straight from the farm.
I wonder, do you recall the price of those, the what we used to call the?
Yeah. I'm paying, $6.99. I think they're $6.99 now. Yeah.
For regular or free-range organic?
Free-range organic, yeah. I get them from a family farm. I have it delivered.
That's why. I was talking about grocery stores.
Yeah. No, I don't shop at grocery stores. I'm all bougie.
Good for you.
I support the local farmers. I spend a lot more money than I would, but I think it's worth it because if they go out of business, then we're stuck eating, you know, Walmart for, you know, eggs and stuff that. I don't want to live in that world. So I think I'm going to.
Suspiciously, Walmart eggs. I saw a story. Walmart eggs are $2.99 a dozen right now.
And that's why people be like, nothing's bad. Life is good. I buy my food at Walmart. When I first, I was like, what? Walmart's selling food? No, I'm not going there. And it's just like McDonald's. It's so cheap. No, I'm not living in that world. So. But that's where they got everybody, you know? It's like...
So I'm thoroughly enjoying this chicken conversation. I just want to make sure that Mom doesn't have anything else she wants to get onto, but I could talk about chickens all day. And I would love to, Mom, at one point during your Good News Report, I would love for you to write down a list that that people can follow along and take notes about what breeds of chickens create an Easter basket. What would you need in your flock to create, you know, gold, dark chocolate, pink, purple, blue.
Okay, hold
green.
It. Hold it. So they're called blue copper morans for those chocolate eggs. Okay. Blue morans for the chocolate covered eggs, black copper morans for the red eggs, Americana for the blue eggs. The pink eggs would be Langshan, or you get something called an olive egger, and those are basically mutts. So they're olive eggers, and they are a mix of an Americana and a crested cream leg bar. That's how you get an olive egger.
Interesting.
So white eggs come from leghorns. Let's see. So our pink eggs with brown speckles come from cochins, C-O-C-H-I-N-S. Let's see, what other colors do I have?
What about gold?
I don't have any gold-colored eggs. I do have they're tan eggs that kind of look, and those can come from Naked Necks or Showgirls.
Aw,
yeah. Do you remember what was that one chicken that we named that with the Naked Neck? What was her name?
the only naked neck we've ever had. What was her name?
Yes. I forgot.
Oh,
I stopped naming my chickens. That's another rule that I have. I don't name my chickens anymore because if I name them, that's the one that the predator is going to get.
Yeah, but that one, we named that naked neck, and she lasted until you gave her to the butcher.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah, she lasted for a long time.
Because she was ugly. Maybe we should just get ugly birds.
So it looks like I'm going to get some naked necks here pretty soon. They lay a
what was
brown
her name?
Egg.
Go ask the kids. Babe, can you go ask the kids, please? Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Let's see. What other colors do I have right now? Black copper morans lay those red eggs. Blue morans lay a chocolate brown egg.
Noodle!
I think that's my... Noodle. That was her name, Noodle. Yeah. Noodle. So,
you killed me.
She did.
I
She's
did.
A butcher. But you
okay.
know what? You have
so,
to be tough if you're going to be in the egg cartel. All right, go on.
So, yes, if you're going to be in the egg cartel, you have to be tough. So let me explain. Let me explain, and I will. So I was feeding fermented feed to my chickens for a very long time. It saved me a lot of money. The chickens were healthy. They were happy. But what happened was, they were missing something, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and they were eating the eggs. So there were a bunch of chickens that were eating eggs, okay? So I actually got rid of them, and then I closed off this one nesting box, and I made them go in the roll-away nesting box. That was the only place they were allowed to lay eggs. Now I've switched my feed. And I have no egg eaters, and so now I'm getting all my eggs, and I'm getting about 14 a day. So that's why, because they were eating the eggs. So that's why Noodle, she didn't go to, I don't know if Noodle went to the butcher or not. I think she went to a...
She definitely went to the butcher. You traumatized me when you told me.
Okay. Thanks for putting that on national public radio, Danielle.
Oh, come on.
You do actually have to be a little tough. Because I mean, if they're eating my eggs every day, then what's the point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
It's all about money,
well, so
for guys.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I have to pay for their feed, Elizabeth. Yeah.
Well, and exactly, and on, like Noodle had not been laying for a very long time when she did that, so
yeah,
that was almost a joke, although it did traumatize me.
It turned into a family pet that's no longer beneficial.
Okay, it was Noodle. We named
the
her.
The life of the farmer.
and I do have a farm. And of course, they're somewhat pets, of course. I love them. I take really good care of my chickens, like really good care. And so, but at some point, if they're eating my eggs and not giving me any, then there's diminishing returns, shall we say.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, you guys have a wonderful week. Be blessed. Be well. Oh. Remember, God knows how many people are supposed to be on this planet, and pinhead bean counters shouldn't be the ones making that decision. Have
agreed.
A great week. We'll see you next week. Okay? Yes.
All right. Love you.
I love you. Bye.
Have a good week.
Bye.
Take care, babe.
And I also think God wants everybody to have chickens.
Absolutely. And you know that the reason there's so many dogs and cats running around farms is because they don't want the children to get attached to the livestock because they're not going to be there forever. It's a cold, cold world.
It is a cold world.
You know,
I also have similar traumatic experience, memories of when my uncle in Pennsylvania pulled up with an 8-point dead buck in the back of his truck. And he said, hey, look, it's Bambi, so it's not just chickens.
I also have
similar traumatic experiences when I have to cull the peaches from the peach tree so that the branches don't break, I don't like it, but it has to happen.
The crying of the branches. My mom would love you. She was always like, you're going to kill the tree. the trauma of bending the branch or whatnot. So funny. Cared more about them than me.
Well, also, if the branch is so heavy that it's going to break, it number one, the peaches are not as big as they could have been. They have to stay small because there's so many of them, and then they're not going to ripen because the branch breaks. You have to, you know what I mean? So it is tough.
Yeah.
You know, there's. I think what was it Downton Abbey where what's her name, Lady Edith says that farming. Farming needs sentiment, but not sentimentality. You know, like you can't just keep a tree because it's past its date. You know, or a chicken that's past its prime.
True, it's a cold world. But if you could damage, it would be like long term trauma, and eventually the tree would die if you did. And when it did, it was your fault.
And the fruit wouldn't be as good.
Exactly. And we'd look at her like she's a crazy person, and we'd go run and play someplace else. But, growing up on a farm, I loved the animals. And, you know, to actually be a part of killing anything, I could never be part of it. But I'd love to eat the meats and such things. And the most devastating thing was when I'd go into the hen house. I was very little because I would stand eye to eye with these geese. And they would attack me, and I couldn't understand why they weren't my friends, and they just wanted to kill me. And they chased me out of the hen house, and chased me around, and I'd be crying. And that was my favorite thing because I had to be with all the animals. But those, they were vicious things.
They were because they were protecting their flock.
Oh, but they were going to they could bite.
That's what they would. They would bite you. Honestly, because they say that like there are symbiotic relationships between different kinds of flocks, like geese and chickens, because, you know, any threat to the flock, a goose would bite the shit out of it. You know what I mean? Chase it away, you know? And so at some point you were this child that was, they didn't know it was a child. They perceived you as a threat.
They had their own. It was like an outhouse. That was their little domain because they couldn't live with anybody else, you know. And now it's kind of. I don't think they have those out there. They have these guinea hens at the chicken farm. I'm thinking, but they don't have those big tall white geese. And but back when I was a kid, they did, and they couldn't be. They didn't get along with anybody. They had their own little house and stayed the hell out of their house.
That's
funny. Oh, my God, it's funny. But, you know, I'm going to tell you a little cute little story about the mice and how.
Okay,
so
and then I
want
to ask you a question about the farm.
Oh, sure. It's so difficult to do the right thing as far as I need to keep the house free of mice. And, I was telling my sister about it got to be just so much that I was like, I have them in my couch, and I'm like, okay. And I said, I gave up because I hate killing them, and then remind me of my puppies and blah, blah, blah. I'm going on and on. I said, people think I'm nuts, and I'm terrible for not wanting to kill. But I said, remember we grew up with these wonderful books, you know, Charlotte's Web and all these, you know, the house mice that lived in your house. And she goes, oh,
Cinderella had mice.
Exactly. She gets kind of tired of my babbling, and she doesn't want to talk anymore. But she listens to this whole thing. And then she goes, oh, yeah, Richard Scary books. And I said, and I just can't. And then she goes, are you going to buy them little clothes? I said, well, over the sentence of the right county. And I just –
she have a pattern?
Realize how fucking ridiculous I am. Because I said, I think I got them out of here, but I know they're in the couch. And I have these drapes that kind of drape along the side of the couch in front of the window. And I said, I moved the drapes, and there's all this mice poop. I go, I can't. They go from the couch, they hide in the drapes, and they go to the table that's got this rock plant full of water. And that's where it's like Disneyland for them. I said, I got to get rid of all the fur and blah, 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 blah. So she goes, well, she thought I didn't like using, I can't do the traps. She goes, no, you use a plant. I go, no, I can't reset them. It's just too much stress. And so she bought me these amazing, she Amazoned them to my house the next day, the Jaws of Death. And like, that's, I would never buy those. I bought the Habit Trail ones and then the little wooden ones, but I'm like, no, I wouldn't buy those. But those were the best. So I got rid of all the mice, and I'm like, and I got new furniture, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm living in a clean house, and it's great. And the puppies are like, where's our friends? Like, oh, no, they can't come back in. And then my friend said, you got to find out where they're coming in from. There's got to be a hole. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, here. And so I'm putting tinfoil in these holes in the corner. There's one in the corner of the living room. I'm like, this had to have been one. And then I see a little tissue. A tissue that came from the wastebasket, because now I have a whole new scope of furniture. So I got this huge chair that's like, now my office is now a big comfy chair with a side table, and I got this little space.
Oh, yay.
In between, it is nice. And the little corner there, there's nothing there. There's room for a table or something, but I moved the table over by me, so it's right there. And I put my golf clubs there, and I got a ball, but there's this looming hole, and I'm like, I should put tinfoil in there. So I did. And I patched, you know, like they can't choose through tinfoil. So I see this, the tinfoil had been moved a little bit, and there's a tissue as if they're stealing all the little things to build a nest in the wall. And then under the chair, there's a little assortment of dog food nuggets. And I'm like, oh my God, again, I can't do this. But they got it going. And I'm like, fuckers, you little fuckers. I made the tinfoil a little more resilient and more of it, and I'm like, you never get back in. And then I started thinking, but what if he's stuck in here? Like, I had to open the hole so he can get out, because, you know, God forbid he's you know, away, trapped away from his family or whatever.
Well,
and I'm like,
there's another exit, right?
I don't know, but I'm like,
well, they had to get in from somewhere.
It's us or them. You know, I got to get out of this sentimentality of, you know, they can't be here. And if you end up dying,
okay,
you die. But
however, listen, just listen. If they're coming into your house and you block off the hole that they're coming in from,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that mean that they've got another, they could just turn around and go back to where they came?
Maybe there's other places they can go downstairs. They can go back out. I just don't want them in my house, but it was the new predicament is, are they stuck in or are they stuck out?
I don't think they are, is what I'm saying.
I opened, there's dog food. They've been pilfering dog food and hiding under the chair and going from the chair to a little hole in the corner. And I'm like, but I opened it up again because I'd rather have them out than in. But then it's like, I don't know. I wish I was a little more ruthless. I probably wouldn't have any fucking mice in the house. But
it seems like it. I would just plug it back up. They know how to get out. They're not going to die. And if they do die, then, you know, live and let die or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have rodents in your house. The farm is going through similar.
Exactly.
And,
you know, and it's like,
and we think it's because
a little different.
Right.
But
so you have to let it go, you know, get an exterminator in there or do something. You can't, you know, especially with new furniture, you know?
I know. But my goodness. So I kind of get it. I get it, the whole, it's hard to be mean to the little animals.
Yeah.
You would think there's enough room. I don't know. And the world is so different now. We don't have those kind of books that teach children to love all animals. I think they're more, I've looked at these books that these kids have, and it's like they're trying to teach them to be office managers and things. And there's nothing to do at all with animals. And I'm like, this is not going well.
No, so, they definitely want to sever that connection. That's for sure. You know, but at the end of the day, it's, okay, so the farm is having issues with mice and rats because of a combination of things. One being that a neighbor cut down two rat-infested palm trees, and another one because the chickens, I believe, are too close to the house. Not according to the city, it's far enough away, but The chickens are, you know, the rats are coming in, you know, because of the chicken. Everybody loves chickens.
Right.
But, you know, and it's not necessarily a huge problem until, you know, the rats start eating through the roof and through the walls.
Right.
You know, then it starts raining and there's a flood. And then all of a sudden the plumbing goes out because the rats are chewing on plumbing, you know.
Right.
So that's, you know, at a certain point, it's just better to get rid of them.
Every farm has a plethora of cats that run around, and that's what they do.
Except my mom. Except our farm, my mom doesn't like cats. Well, and so I'm just like, go to the Humane Society. Just get some feral cats. Let them eat the rats.
Well, I hope she listens to my ridiculous story about me and my mice. She needs to have a cat, and it's outside.
Several.
It's kinda like,
several.
And you know what? That would give that bobcat something else to eat, too. One more little thing. Cats
right?
Tons of cats.
I was saying, you know, throw chicken breasts down, you know, down in the, there's this little like drain at the bottom of our hillside. Like, throw it down there. Feed the cat, you know. You know, we joke around like on the side about, you know, we'll just, you know, put a collar on him, put a bell, you know, so we know when he's coming.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a question about the chicken farm.
Sure.
Do they grow anything other than, or do they grow anything, or is it just livestock?
You know what? They don't. They have, there is land that was kind of farmed out to farmers, but that was sold to the Forest Preserve, because half of that farmland has been preserved with the Forest Preserve, and there's a couple other farms down the road that the Forest Preserve bought. So it kind of keeps the aesthetics of its farmland, where everywhere else, all the farmland had been sold to all these big, huge houses, these gorgeous houses are built around. But their farm, that land, we used to, it was sold to the Forest Preserve. So he's basically just got the what used to be called the apple orchard, but it's a correct, it's like a 3 or 4 acres of land that is fenced in. It depends. It goes back and forth between just being open, and then they'll fence it up to do horses. And then they decided to just fence it up with chicken wire, and it's this big, huge chicken farm. But growing anything per se, they don't. They're, so they don't. There's nothing there anymore, land-wise, to do that. And I do believe, there's not really even enough acreage to do anything that would be beneficial. In the back, he has his own huge garden for his own, and everybody has gardens out there. So, like, and people will bring things in to sell at his little it's basically a front porch, but he'll do
it's a what?
Pumpkins and mums. It actually turned into a really nice seasonal kind of thing where, you know, he's got people in the neighborhood that have honey. So there's honey and eggs.
So like a little farmer's market?
Yeah, like a farmer's market kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
He'll do hay ride kind of things. They have a tractor where the kids can come and do a little ride around with Farmer Brown, and it's kind of neat.
Like corn maze and stuff like that. Aw.
Yeah. So I'm hoping he got kind of discouraged with the prices of the chicken, and I think they're going to continue doing it because he hasn't given up yet, because I think it does have a quaintness, and they're, you know, instead of giving up, you can just have it be like a cute little relic of the past where you can actually kind of make some money at it if he was a little more wanting to make money. But he sells, he does wood. He does firewood and then chicken eggs. And there's just a surplus of people just come and are giving him, you know, preserves and selling, you know, firewood and taking down, cutting trees, and then selling the firewood. So that's what he likes doing the best, I think, is the firewood and the trees, taking trees down.
I think I want to be his friend.
Oh yeah, he's wonderful. And I told him I have like a million egg cartons here, and he's like, bring them, I need them. And yeah, he's cool guy. And he's always
That's awesome.
Doing something fun. Everybody loves him. Everyone loves
he
him.
He should sell eggs. Like not to eat, but to hatch.
You know, he got a load last time I was there. He gets his stuff from some guy in Kentucky. I think he gets his wood from Kentucky because he has so many customers he can't keep up with it. So he'll buy a whole semi full of wood from Kentucky, and some guy brought him like 300 chickens the last time I was there. So he's got his connection.
So he does bartering?
He's got it going on. Don't know what he does. He's got it going on. He's always working.
That's
so
awesome.
It might be that he has a decent rate that he ends up making money off of whatever he pays for the big truckload. He ends up making a profit, I'm sure,
mm-hmm.
on that. Yeah, so it's kind of like the almost like the mafia, but he's a farmer.
Right, yeah, cartel.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
He can be part of, yeah, he can be a part of the egg cartel. But that's the kind of stuff that we need a lot more of, is these local, and obviously you have to trade. There's things that you need from other places, but like, do you know if he's, I guess solar is probably not as big a thing where you are as it is here, right?
No, they're trying to push it. A lot of the little houses are getting them. I think they've given them some kind of a tax credit. So I see a lot more actual homes in my area. But out there, no. Like he doesn't have a heated barn. He should get a little heated barn because he's boarding horses out there. But it's kind of like back in the day, it's like they didn't have heated barns. And, you know, he's even worse than I am with old school. And and they survive, you know. Animals live outside, they have fur and blah, 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 blah. He's one of those guys. And
right.
It's true. And even like I had a cat who, of all the places he could live, he lived on my back porch with no heat and had him for years. I'm sure he could have found some other place to go, but he chose to be here. So they do survive with their little winter coat that they have through all the winters.
Yeah.
But I always felt bad. I always try to get him to come in, and he'd go into freak out mode. He wanted to be outside, so I was like, there you go. Then it's your choice to freeze. But I remember
right.
when I was a kid, you always wanted to bring all the animals in and hide them in the closets and whatnot, and because they can't live outside. And everybody's like, no, they can't. They have to go outside.
Funny. Yeah.
Funny
My
thing.
Big thing right now is I think that places that have cold weather should really think about figuring out how to grow indoors. And you know, insert said, you know, weed jokes, you know. But if you can grow weed inside, you can grow a tomato inside.
I think with the possibility of a real live toxic acid rain becoming a thing in the Midwest because of the deep dump of chemicals in the Ohio River Basin, that might really become a more practical way the more the people become aware of how the rain cycle is. And,
right, more
you know,
survival way, you know, the way to survive going forward. And, you know, I just really feel like these people that are already in the know on how to live off the land may need to adapt a little bit because of the climate contamination that's going on. Remember, I don't talk about global warming, but I will talk about climate contamination, and that's what's going on right now, you know?
Absolutely. I tell you what, I saw this fantastic greenhouse. There's a farm over there in the next town. There's a little area that has a horse farm, And again, the Forest Preserve bought up all the land around it, and it's a nice little place to go walking and riding horses and such things. And there's a house on the edge, and I never, like, noticed what was back there because I'm always kind of driving kind of fast, but I just kind of caught a glimpse. And they have got it going on. They have this greenhouse that's as big as a house and beautiful glass house. It's all well stuff. I'm like, I got to go in there someday and see what they've got going, because that's what everyone should have, is a greenhouse in their backyard that can operate kind of like year-round and keep things going. Like in the old greenhouses or nurseries is what they were. And there aren't that many of them around anymore. There used to be some really great ones.
Right.
And if you wonder where people are getting their shrubs, you know, it went corporate. That's where it went. You know, it went to the big Home Depots, and that's where it went to. But it used to be there were these little nurseries all over the place, and you'd go get your shrubs and your plants and your tomato plants. And my mom was always buying. We had like 100 trees in our backyard. That was our favorite place to go, and hers too. And we'd run around in this nursery, and she'd come home with a tree and all kinds of stuff. And,
that's
fun too. It was a cool. Just
we still have those around here, but I really did think that they were going to go extinct during COVID because they were kicking people out for not wearing masks. They were like the small business mentality where they, you know, like, I actually had this like, you know, a real world experience where I went into my favorite small nursery called Walter Anderson, and I was told to leave. I had my basil in my hand. I had, you know, I was going to buy some other things, but they told me to leave because I was, and at that point, that was so early in the pandemic, I was still wearing a face shield, right? So I had a
shield,
face shield. And they were like, get out.
Oh, the shield wasn't enough for them, huh?
No.
Interesting. And I wonder, you know, because back then, it was like, it wasn't so much that people were freaked out and crazy, but I think they were getting paid. They were getting that corporate money to enforce this.
Yes. And we know,
you know,
that from Trader Joe's.
Yeah, and from Ace Hardware. And
yes.
So,
or they were
I remember one video I saw, I think David Rodriguez did. It was a farmer's market, and he went there, and they're outside, and they were like, you have to have a mask or we're going to have to close down. Do you want us? They just said open up again. And he was like, you know, warrior for no. And stood there until the police came and stuff. But the point was, you're outside. We don't need these things outside. Why would we need them? But these people really just wanted to make their business work. And it was one of those uncomfortable videos to watch because – I don't know. It was kind of like, I don't know. In the stream of time, it was like, yes, we all had to stand up, but it was kind of like, let these people operate. They're trying to make a living.
Right.
But,
and the problem was, is that, you know, and this is the second half of this story, is that after I was kicked out of Walter Anderson Nursery, I left and I went to Home Depot and I bought basil. And I bought a couple other things. And guess what? Nobody harassed me. And so there was this divide between small businesses that we all want to honor and support that the big business doesn't, you know, completely kill this industry. But they wouldn't even let us. The small business was so afraid.
Yeah.
That they would harass and discriminate and, you know, and all of these things, people who wouldn't conform, you know. It was really sad.
It was. But the thing with Home Depot, because they were like that all through the whole thing, the guy that owns that is a real, real patriot. So I think it was a question of their policy was, we're not doing this. This is bullshit. Because they were really the only.
But it wasn't just Home Depot. It was Walmart.
No.
It was Lowe's.
No,
it was Target.
No.
It was the big
Home
box
Depot.
Stores. I could walk into any big box store And even, you know, like Walmart, say Walmart, right? Like there's the Walmart greeters out there saying, you know, here you go. Hi, hello, welcome to Walmart. Take a mask. And even the Walmart greeter, you know, and that's like really synonymous with like the lowest end of the barrel, right? Like people who are there that mm-hmm. are not necessarily skilled in any major right. way. And even the lowest right. rung of Walmart knew that if somebody said, I have an exemption, you did not harass them.
Well, I think the
small business
Sam Walton. But isn't Sam Walton kind of on the level of being a patriot a little
Who?
Bit or not?
Who?
Sam Waltz, the guy that owns Walmart.
I don't know. But what about Target? What about Lowe's? What about all of the big box
yeah,
stores?
I don't know.
You know, what I'm saying is that the big box stores have enough money to employ a team of lawyers. And this team of lawyers
yeah.
read, you know, the mandate
right.
or the recommendations and realized that there was a very real list of people who were exempt from a mask policy. And so
mm-hmm.
if you said, you know, either that or you would have Walmart greeters trying to pin down an 18-month-old kid, you know, to put a mask on him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But so what I'm saying is that they had enough resources and lawyers to train even their basic lower rung employees to not discriminate against people who could not wear masks. You know?
Yeah.
And those smaller stores, those mom and pop stores, didn't have that luxury. And so a lot of them, because of that, went out of business. Really, it's really unfortunate. But, you know, they committed suicide
yeah.
as a business. They put themselves out of business when the big box stores didn't.
Yeah, it's backwards. Because they should have been the ones that have the say, being that
yeah.
they were their own boss.
And it's so sad. It's so
yeah.
sad.
And it's still going on, little one at a time. All these been in business for years, going out of business still. All the quaint little family owned businesses are taking a dive.
Yeah.
The corporate oligarchs definitely seem to be winning. So we have to really go into the land of. Like, support the little guys, and that's what I'm doing.
Right.
I
agree with that.
It's so discouraging.
It really
so
is, because, you know, because there's only a certain number of businesses, small businesses out there that didn't put themselves out of business that we get to choose from now, right? My mom was talking about how Bill Gates bought a big share of
Heineken
beer.
Or
yeah,
again.
There's a local brewery here in San Diego, and there's a lot of fantastic local breweries in San Diego. But one was called Mike Hess, H-E-S-S, and fantastic beer, fantastic microbrew beer.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, you know, at first they adhered to this nonsense, right? The closed down, wear a mask, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, they were like, you know, because they obviously they didn't serve beer. Or, I'm sorry, serve food. They just serve beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that was a big thing in California is that you've got to be, if you don't serve beer, you have to stay closed. I'm sorry, I said it again. If you don't serve food, you have to stay closed. So if it's just a bar that serves, you know, alcohol, you can't stay open. It has to serve food. And so Mike Hess.
What was the rationale with that?
I don't know. Like maybe it's, I think it has to do with food. You can't close down places that serve food. And so if you're just a bar, you know, you can go buy your alcohol in the local liquor store.
Because common sense would dictate that a bar would be safer than food, the handling of such things. But common sense went out the window.
But what they're talking about is, first of all, they don't want people gathering and talking. And second of all, their scientific rationale is that there's a lot of people and they're going to gather and they're going to talk and they're going to stay, linger, you know. So I think maybe that could be a big part of it. But so this is one of my, you know, I was really upset about my test because I used to love to go to this brewery. My husband and I would go often. It's right down the street from us, one of their locations. It was closed, and I was getting so angry at small box stores, small stores that, you know, that were closing themselves, killing themselves, really, that I was like, screw it. I won't support, you know, my Kess anymore. But then they put up this big, like, beautiful, eloquent sign out in front saying, you know what, screw this, basically. We're going to stay open. And I was like, thank God, you know, some small businesses that have some backbone. And that really was kind of the turning point, in my opinion, around here of small businesses, because everybody was so afraid that they just did what they were told. And they didn't look at the other exceptions like these big box stores. So, so support Mike Hess if you can, and Mike Hess Brewery, because they survived the storm and they deserve some praise for it.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, up here, our only saving grace was there was one lawyer who came up and he actively spoke to business owners throughout the whole state, more so up north. He was down south with the little guys down there. They didn't pay any attention to this. But he came up and was schooling business owners in what their rights were. And that's when it stopped up here. People found out they had rights and mandates.
Oh, that's
laws.
Amazing.
The governor was not the king.
And because they don't have a team of lawyers on staff.
Yeah, and he was a lawyer.
So, but like I said, Walmart has seven lawyers on staff.
Yeah.
Good for him.
You know, yes, it was great. The did you see the monologue that Woody Harrelson did for SNL?
Yeah, I sure did. I should have downloaded it, but I just found out about it kind of late.
I watched it and I thought, you know what? Good for him, but the way that he did it, I'm like, oh, man, I didn't care for it. But what I thought was very interesting was when he dared to make fun of the cult of death in front of the cult, it deadpan. There was it was completely silent and it didn't fall well. And I just thought, oh, is that not interesting that they're so brainwashed into this? They didn't know how to react to the tongue in cheek absurdity of what had happened to them. Leads me to the point of, I was going to say, thank God this is over, but it's like, is it over? You know, have we gotten out of this hypnotic days of doing what we're told? You know, it's almost like the law.
No, we haven't, and especially Saturday Night Live.
I don't think we have.
That makes perfect sense that there would not be a, you know, the people wouldn't think that was funny, but it was really funny.
Well, but they didn't even boo or anything. So I kind of like, they didn't know how to react. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. And I wish he had a little more backbone and it wasn't so self-demeaning in his ways. Kind of like he made himself out to look like he was some crazy drug addict instead of
I don't think he wrote that, though.
I don't think he did either. It was kind of uncomfortable to watch, and that's why I thought, nah, we don't need to play it. But it just was interesting that people still – it's like they couldn't even – it would be better if they would have, like, booed him, you know, take a stand, have a backbone, have a fucking opinion.
Oh,
they didn't know
they
what
don't
to
have
say
one.
Because no one's told them how they should feel about this. Like, oh, my God,
right.
I'm not going to make it.
You know, it could be like a what's it called? Like a predictive programming moment. But I don't know. Stay tuned, I guess. We'll see. Because this is the second one Saturday Night Live is done, right?
I only knew about it because it came through my feed. I stopped watching that years ago, and I don't have a TV anymore. So I'm really out of the propaganda loop, which it's so – I feel so much better. Do you know what I did last night? I read a whole book, and it was just so liberating. And I think what we've lost is we've lost that ability to work our minds because nobody reads anymore. Even me, I barely read, and I have all these books. And I just was like – it was like beckoned me, and I was like, I'm going to read you. And it was really – it was Arthur – oh, what's his name? Arthur C. Clarke. He wrote the 2000 Odyssey. Songs, was it called Songs of a Distant Earth? It was kind of a sci-fi movie type of deal. But it was pretty good. And I just thought it took me to a whole different place. And it put my mind away from the nonsense that comes through your Facebook feed and the whole watching. Watching is different than thinking. And the act of reading really activates your brain, and it puts you in a different place. So I really encourage everyone to step away from the media, whatever the media may be, because it's really affecting your perception of life and your well-being and grounding yourself away from this clown. It's like kabuki theater clown world. It's kind of like, it really is insane. It kind of keeps you in a state of frantic, kinetic, not knowing how you are, how reality is.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. There's this, we've talked about this before, but in the Bible, there are spiritual gifts that anyone with the Holy Spirit, and we know that, you know, whoever believes, shall have not perish, but have eternal life. But eternal life, right? You know, John 3:16, right? Anybody who believes these things shall not perish, but have eternal life. There is, you know, just to put this out there, that eternal life is just the starting point. Whether it's heaven or hell in eternal life, you know, that's reserved for Christians, right? Atheists, they die, they stay dead. That's circle of life. That's kind of what is true. It's what the Bible says, right? But for people who have the Holy Spirit, there are gifts that are given. Speaking in tongues, interpretation of tongues, prophecy, like ladder rungs, right? Word of knowledge, word of wisdom, and then we come to discerning of spirits.
Yeah.
And it's kind of up there, right? So we've got prophecy, right? The interpretation, right? Think of each of these as a ladder rung, speaking in prophecy, then word of knowledge, word of wisdom, speaking, discerning of spirits, right? And so discerning of spirits really, I think, is kind of a phase that I'm at right now where I can see through the media, you know, I can discern what kind of spirits are being spoken through the media, and they're negative, right? But I really do feel like it's, yours and my obligation, duty, since we've got this platform, to tell people about this, discern it, to decipher it, to, and people think of this usually as like haunted houses, you know, like, oh, this house is haunted. We can feel the spirit in this house. And that's not necessarily untrue. I'll tell you just a quick story. I've got a friend who, you know, gosh, before I had my son, so 16, 17, 18 years ago, he actually married my husband and me. And he we lived in this house. We called it the commune, but it was like a five-bedroom house, and all personalities really were represented, right? And we had the gay drag queen. We mm-hmm. had, you know, the young professional. We had the hippie, and we had the Catholic virgin, you know, and all mm-hmm. of them, everything was there. So the Catholic virgin, I'm not going to put out any names, decided that he was going to move. About a year and a half after we, you know, got this project together, was moving back to the East Coast. Had already moved some stuff out, a lot of stuff. But while he was there, a lot of people in the house felt like there was this presence in the house, like this negative presence. The hippie said that this presence sat in her chest one night and, you know, there was, you know, lack of oxygen. She woke up gasping, right? And everybody else, like, they weren't, like, super affected by it, but it was, like, this energy, this presence that was there in the house. Everybody felt it. And we all thought, because my friend Josh also lived here. He was a homeless evangelist, came and lived here. And so everybody felt it, including him. And so one day we asked Josh, can you figure out where this presence is coming from? And he walks, you know, around the house a little bit. And then he walks up the stairs, two-story place, and walks into, you know, the hallway in front of the Catholic Virgin rooms. And he goes to open the door. He's got no boundaries, but we're like, nah, Josh, you can't go in there. If somebody's living there, you can't go in there. And he's like, fine, but this is where it's coming from. So months and months later, he moves out. Most of his stuff is gone. And we're like, well, fine, he's gone. Most of his stuff is gone. Actually, I think all of the stuff he was going to take at that point was gone. So we're like, this thing should be gone, right? No, it wasn't gone. So Josh comes back up to the room and goes inside and stands in front of, you know, this closet in this room and reaches into this closet, which was empty. And there was this little lip in the closet, and he pulls out this wooden cross. And it looked to be very old, very old. We don't think it was, you know, from Catholic Virgin. He took everything of value. He's like, this is it, right here. And we burned it, and this thing never came back. And not to speak ill of holy, idols, but there's a lot of bad spirits that get conveyed through these artifacts that people can't throw away. Does that make sense?
Well, it's very true. And I tell you what, it's not just a holy artifact, but it could be a friend of mine gave me a dresser. And I got it in the house. And when I put my hands on it, it had some really, really intense bad energy. And
yeah.
I have this ability to feel good energy. And that's why
yeah.
I have all my amazing magic rocks. And my dad told me, he was like, you always pick a rock up, and if it comes, it's a good rock. So my dad had this too. So you can actually just feel good energy.
It's discerning of spirit.
Or bad, right? It's energy is a real thing. And yes,
yeah.
You know, in the Bible, when Jesus cast out the evil spirits and they ran,
yeah.
they had no place to go, they ran into a herd of swine and they ran off the cliff and died. There are spirits all over, you know, we are living in how do I want to put this? The spirit of the world is Satan. Satan is has control over the earth for a certain amount of time, and we are under when we talk about why these governments are so damn evil, it's because everything is Satan's right now. And it's more apparent by what is being put out there as being acceptable and good for children. This is evil and demonic. You look at the Grammys. Mm-hmm. It's just in your face so much. But it always has been. Satan is the ruler of the world. And there are bad spirits everywhere. They're stuck here. But there's also good spirits.
And he hasn't always been the ruler of this world.
No. But we are dealing with, just darkness everywhere.
Yeah, we're living in Revelation.
A pillar of light. You get to know the difference between right and wrong. We have our protection. God is here. And God will protect us.
Right.
And speaking out the truth enforces that. But there's always that, I don't tend to want to even pick things up from garage sales and stuff unless I feel them, hold them in my hand. You can let bad things into your life and not even know about it. And that's a real thing.
I totally agree.
Really is.
And I shouldn't have said, just religious things. They can attach themselves to anything, really, any kind of tangible thing.
And that's kind of a frightening thing. And another thing that happened to me not so long ago was when I was having all these really bad experiences with breathing, and it was like even more so than just not being able to breathe. It was a weird route. I was like, am I under, it was 5G turned on. I had no idea what was going on. It was really terrible. I like to go to sleep with YouTube, listen to different things. And it was like going into some metaphysical, deep, weird mystery school stuff. And it was just like, I felt like I was under attack. I was like, this is demonic. I shut it off. Mm-hmm. No more tablet. All it was turned all the lights on and turned on, some AM radio, because I'm like, and my Bible. And I'm like, I just got to get into a different place. But it's kind of like, what are you inviting into your area, into your home, into your head, into your life? And that's kind of like really this, the talents of the discernment. I think the whole world is starting to wake up to this new ability to discern what is being propagated upon us.
Yes, discernment of spirit. And so you're
terrible,
right.
Tyranny. And where's the tyranny? Where's this spirit of tyranny coming from? Because it's like all over the place. You've got this terrible dictatorship of death in China. I mean, if we were going to stand up and unconditionally support anything, we should have stood up and supported Tibet and the Uyghurs and this assault upon a peaceful people. Instead, we just let this go, this huge Holocaust go on. That's
because the media didn't tell us we needed to support it. Look what happens when people believe and stand up and believe in something like Ukraine, which is BS. We all know it's BS. But what can we do? What do we do when people come together and support something? We can move mountains. We give billions and billions and billions of dollars, right? We can do all of these things. But it's at the behest of our owners.
The fact that it's not just one country that is doing this dystopian boot on everyone's neck.
No, but United States is the only country we can control.
Well, but can we control the United States? I don't think so. They seem to be doing whatever the hell they want.
Good point.
It's how we respond is how we control the situation.
Yeah.
Our response is how we control the situation. And that's where the spirit of discernment comes in. And I think people are waking up all over to this. Because God does win in the end, and the people are taking sides, and it's there's discernment to be able to see what is good and what is bad, and whether it be standing up for the fact that they want everyone to live in these 15-minute smart cities in the UK, they are standing up and not allowing this to happen. Instead of like, oh God, yes, this will be better for us. No. There's a kickback to all of this. But it's almost – but my point was, where is this spirit of tyranny coming from? It's evil. It's not good. And we are under this huge fight between good and evil. It's such a huge worldwide level of a spirit of whether it be the death cult or this tyrannical, whether it come from, you know, these evil corporations, but the spirit of wanting to oppress an entire planet full of people, you need to pull back and say, well, where's this really coming? Is this, you know, and do we have anything that we can fight with? It is our, they want our permission. We do not need
They need our permission.
Comply. You know, even like back to the Garden of Eden, where if Eve had said, no, I don't want the apple, she was given that choice. We're all given the choice of what we want to do.
Yeah.
And that's where they're trying to steal that, even that the fact that we have that ability to make a choice. That mind fuck of you're under, there's no way out of this. And if you don't comply, you're killing grandma. You know, we have that power is just to make our own choices.
Right. But the reason I bring up the spiritual stuff, right, is because I believe it's trauma-based mind control, all of it. And I think this is we've got a caller. I really should write down phone numbers. And I do, but I think this is Lily, possibly. Hello.
Hey, I'm sorry that I am so late.
No, hi, Lily.
Like,
I love you.
Felt sick, and then I felt better, and then I felt sick again. So, anyway, I love you so much, and it's been a great show. I've been listening.
Oh,
you called it at the perfect time because this is your topic.
I get lucky like that sometimes. It's been just like, I don't know. You guys are just really great. Got this show, so even when I can't participate, I like thoroughly enjoy listening to you.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you. Listen, I'm glad you called in because there was something when you said that you got sick right after it snowed. I thought, well, of course you did, because we are like, not only are we under a spiritual attack, we're under a chemical warfare right now. They are using this.
We are, and they derailed a train 3 hours away from me.
And they're making us sick. This is exactly what the military has developed to take over a country by making the other army sick. And they have the entire country is under this, and we're all, not like, you know, COVID, going to die, but we're all sick and not feeling good. So we're just, there's nobody outside. It's gorgeous today in Chicago. But all last week, it was two ice storms went through here. It was raining and disgusting and cold and blah, and everybody's sick. So of course there's nobody outside in a beautiful, it's like 50 degrees and sunny and not one.
It's been the same way here. It's been the same way here. And the week that they derailed those seven trains, they derailed one 3 hours away from where I live in Gothenburg, Nebraska. So that was interesting. But the exciting part is that it doesn't matter how hard they try to make us feel sick, because we already know the things to take and the deeper level to connect with our body on, you know, like to heal ourselves. And we're remembering how to do that. So that's beautiful. But also the moon has shifted. It is on the opposite part of this like side of the sky that it's always on. And it is has also flipped and reversed like the direction that it faces. And that's one of the last signs, important signs of prophecy that happened just before our ascension. So, like, us winning is, like, you know, it's imminent, and it has accelerated much faster. And I think that also is partially to blame for us feeling sick as well, because it's a really great energy. It's very important, and it's taking down their matrixes on an astral and spiritual level, which are also happening in the physical here. You know, like as we ascend, but also it makes us feel a little bit sick because it's such an intense, you know, kind of like powerful energy that our electromagnetic spheres are not used to.
That's interesting.
So that part is really, like, I'm so excited.
That's cool. There's a crescent moon this afternoon. I went out, and it was up in the sky. I thought, oh, my God, the moon is out. And it was in the east during the day. And I'm like, I'm always fascinated with why it, during the daytime it's on that side, but at nighttime it's on the other side. So do you know?
Flat Earth.
How new is this? No, it's not flat Earth. It's just the planet.
I'm being a heckle
that much. What is like?
Well, that moon isn't real. Like, that's not our actual moon. We have an actual, a real moon that we can feel the energy from. But the moon that we visibly see right now is not ours. And it is a big part of what they use. You know, they use that, whatever you want to say that the moon is. You know, some people call it, like, their base or their ship, whatever. It doesn't matter. But what it is that the reason it's, like, locked with the tides, too, and the water is because that is what allows them to maintain this as a prison realm, and it allows them to maintain their matrixes, their technology, all of these various things that they use against us. And so that is actually being taken out. That moon is leaving. It's being taken down, you know. And so one of the really cool things, like, I was laughing because I've been in Facebook jail, so I can't post anything. And I was noticing that nobody that I was seeing was really talking about the moon, you know, like changing direction and shifting and everything. And so I was looking up on different platforms to see if people were discussing it. And NASA issued a statement, which made me laugh because we all know that they're just a bunch of Nazis, but it's fine.
Yeah.
They issued a statement admitting that the moon is leaving, but their lie, of course, is that the moon got hit by something. And so now it's like shrinking and becoming smaller and
really?
Moving away from our Earth.
Oh,
and
well,
it is moving
are,
away, but not
so
because it's shrinking.
That's interesting. You know, we can't.
Yeah, because now I don't sound like a lunatic because NASA's admitted it. They're just obviously not saying it's because we've won.
Yeah, they have to make some ridiculous fucking excuse for that. That's interesting. Nobody can see the sky anymore at night because it's so sprayed over, number one. We don't know what the fuck's going
right.
on out there. And
true.
When we do, we don't know anything about the fucking stars and the moon. That's so cool. I'd love to talk more about this, actually. Where's the real – because I'm like, okay, why is the sun way the fuck over here? Couldn't have changed that much. During the – a few months ago, I caught a glimpse in my rear-view mirror. The sun was like – the size of Saturn, and it was bright red, and it was at the end of the road, not where I'm for the time of day, and how I was like, what the fuck is that? Is it a
yeah?
And I thought, did they just last? This is my
grandfather's
they,
sun
they
has
actually,
been changing.
They actually took our planet and moved it somewhere else because it's not what it used to be. Like, this is craziness. And they, you know, they talk about
the
Nibiru and the two suns. I've seen videos of that. The big sun and a little sun in the sky at the same time, and nobody is like, what the hell is going on here? Because
that's prophecy too, because the balance is being restored, right? So the fake sun that's inverted is being moved out. The fake moon that's inverted is being moved out, and ours are being restored. So we feel them but don't see them because, you know, other people want to say that this is a round realm or a flat realm. It doesn't really matter, but it's an energetic realm, and it's got a torus, you know, which is why we have a hollow earth
a
and a middle tour. Earth and the surface. It's like a disc, you know, and, like, that's why you have these different realms that you can access with frequency, because if you imagine, like, those old things for CDs, you know, that they were, like, round and they had the thing in the middle. I can't explain things very well, but you could, like, stack all the CDs on top of each other and then put the cover on and have them all right there. Well, that's what our realm is kind of like, right? There's all these parallel spaces and dimensions, you know, that are just, like, so close to each other that we could reach out and touch them, but we don't because the frequency is different and so we don't see them. But that's what's happening. So the moon and the sun are just, like, under us, right? Like, in Middle Earth, our real moon. And the real sun is now, like, returned into the sky, which is why we're seeing two. And that real sun will turn blue. That's one of, like, the next really big things that happens at the same time that we're ascending out of the prison realm.
Wow.
Is that the sun turns blue and it finishes the purification. So, like, after the purification, balance is restored. That's what the new earth is, or the fifth earth. You know, the Bible talks about how Yeshua will come in, creator, and create a new earth. It's all the same thing. It's just, like, given different names. But that is what happens when all the great balance is restored, right? So we become back to the realm that the creator first made and intended to, for it to be, with all of natural law and balance restored, and all of the bloodlines and the Dracos and reptilians, all the beings that are negative and don't belong here and aren't at the right frequency, just get purified mm-hmm. out. And then the land is simultaneously, you know, like everything is simultaneously healed, you know, and mm-hmm. like made exactly as it was originally. So that's coming so soon, and I'm so excited. Can't contain
yeah.
myself.
In the biblical scripture, it talks about new heavens and a new earth. And you've just explained
yeah.
that quite well. That's
yeah.
very cool.
Yeah,
and you know,
yes, it's so incredible.
It's amazing that you can only see the real color of the sun right when it comes up. And as soon as it gets about an inch up over the horizon, that's gone, and it turns into this little bitty white thing that's covered by all this heavy metal shit that's sprayed in the sky. And I'm always fascinated with how quickly the sun can be hidden like that. I wonder if that's not
yeah.
part of their design to try to keep us hidden away.
Well,
from...
you know how the Bible tells us to look to the sky, to look to the heavens
mm-hmm.
and look to the sky, and we will see the signs of prophecy
yeah.
being fulfilled. My personal belief is that I think that they use like the same thing for many reasons, right? So like they never let, you know, a tragedy go to waste, for example. They just use it for everything.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what they're doing with dimming the sky, right? They're using it to spray poisons and you know, to have more nanotechnology with the vaccine, but they're also
mm-hmm.
dimming the sky and especially the sun, which, you know, Bill Gates came out a few years ago and said that his plan was to dim the sun, and then China started building their own projector sun. And so that's all, in my belief system, that is all because we were told to watch the sky for the signs. And so, you know, like if you want people to remain confused and you take
mm-hmm.
away the signs they're looking for, but the funny thing that makes me laugh at them is that they're so pathetic and nothing they do ever works. And so, you know, they can hide the sun to a degree from us, but they can't hide it entirely, and they can't hide the energy that we feel from it and our inner knowing and our soul connection, you know, so we still know what's happening, whether we can see the sun or not.
It's what they throw in is all this trauma-based mind control at the same time, trying
mm-hmm.
to stop
yep.
what's eventually going to happen. And it is pathetic. It really is.
Yeah, and it's why they're trying to scare people with fake aliens and Project Bluebeam, right? Because,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because
oh,
that
I
is how they're trying to invert it.
I almost did
oh,
a segment on Project Bluebeam tonight. I almost did it, but I didn't.
We'll have to
but
do that next
that's
week.
Exactly
because
what's
that's
going
big,
on.
That's a big thing. Honestly, there was a kid filmed the Starlink is what it was. But he was freaking out. And I'm just like, oh, my God, stop. You know, they have got everyone so
As somebody who saw Starlink in the sky, that shit was terrifying the first
it
time
was,
I saw it.
Until you knew what it was. Now you're
until
like,
you
oh,
knew what
is,
it was.
Yeah. And I would have thought that everybody knows what that is by now. But it was
well,
almost
but
like
was
watching,
couple, you know, about 5 years ago. But it was on a day that one of those religious cults too were like, "Oh, it's the end of the world and it's the rapture, right?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "All right,
yeah.
so far no rapture, whatever." And then I see this
I
thing
know.
In the sky. I was like, "Shit!"
It was. It
but
was,
it was Starlink.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how everything is. It's terrifying until we know what it actually is. And I think that
yeah.
that's why, like, they, you know, they don't have any power. These 13 bloodlines, but they are grand magicians, right? They're able to
yeah.
use illusion, and so that's all they do. They don't actually have any power or anything at all. They're really pathetic, scared little, you know, like cockroach parasitic
mm-hmm.
beings, but
yeah.
they make themselves look bigger and more powerful, and they do things like put weird stuff in the sky, right, and then scare us and tell us that this horrible thing is happening, or, you know, they invert
yeah.
spirituality and make it a religion and tell people that everyone's going to hell. And you know what I mean? Like, that's just what they do. But then as soon as we realize what things actually are, then we're not scared of them anymore. And I think that's what this mass awakening is really doing, right, is showing us that nothing that they said in their systems was essential ever was. Nothing that we thought we were afraid of was ever actually real or even scary, you know, and we're starting to, like, remember who we are and who they are. And that is, like, helping shift the balance. I'm sorry?
You know, it's like it's bit by bit, right? Like, we were just talking earlier about nuclear weapons, nuclear blasts, these things. And it's like, they're not going to do that. They've already told us they're not going to do that. But there is this trauma-based mind control of, you know, previous generations that really hold on to that. That's that, you know, almost, I don't want to say ancestral curses, definitely like bloodline curses that, you know, that your ancestors, your, you know, parents, your grandparents, they really did believe that they were going to be blown up, you know, at any minute. But, you know, there are so many other weapons, so many more potent weapons right now that they can use on us, that they don't need to destroy land. They can, you know, do so many other things. And it has to do with mind control, you know, that we'll kill ourselves. We'll willingly inject this, you know, vaccine into us or whatever you want to call it, this mRNA gene therapy. We'll just do that because we're afraid. You know, we're afraid of all of these things. And anyway, sorry, rambling.
Absolutely. No, you're completely right, though. It's absolutely what they're doing. And, you know, they can't destroy us. They just can't. Unless through fear and trauma, we give them consent and allow it to happen, right? Like they can't do anything unless we allow it. They just made things so inverted and so systemic and insane, you know, and backwards, that it was so confusing to everyone that we just were tricked into giving away our power and thinking, you know, and like just literally not remembering who we were. And so that's why it's such an exciting time to get to be here for this, you know, like even though it's a challenge and it's pretty intense, it's also so beautiful and such like a wonderful reward and gift, you know, like that we get to witness not only like ourselves reawakening in our own experience, but also people around us.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
And I think that that's like super wonderful and exciting. And it gives me hope, like in the times when it's extra intense and I feel kind of like crummy, you know, but I see everyone around like waking up and figuring things out. And it's super exciting. And then I get to celebrate with humanity, you know, a little bit. And like when we think we're crazy, then we realize like, no, we're not, because we get instant like validation and confirmation.
My husband's taken to calling me a time traveler. He's like, how are you right about all these things? You know what I mean?
Because
we've been talking about these things for so many years. It's like, you know, he's like, how did you do it? How do you know this? So I think you must have been here before, because, you know, how are you right about Epstein and COVID and, you know, and, you know, all of these things. I guess, like, to me, that's my little, like, reaping of the rewards that we're owed for this, you know, for telling everyone about our deciphering of the, you know, of the spirits, how we know what's happening, how we appear to be ahead of all mainstream outlets, how we're right on all of these things before it happens. How we can, you know, call it and, you know, these outlandish things we were totally right about. So he's like, pretty sure you're a time traveler.
Absolutely. You really are, because time isn't real and you are a time traveler. But also, you know, like there's a lot of texts that make sense that talk about how like the ones who are awake and who are like conscious and teaching other people right now are some of the original ancestors returned to be here at this time specifically to assist in restoring balance. And so, you know, like it kind of makes, not out of like ego or arrogance, but it makes sense to me that we very likely are, you know, because we just like know uncanny things and have like memories of things that we wouldn't otherwise, I think.
I was convinced I was a pedo-gate victim for so long, you know, because I'm like, how do I know all these things? How do I know, because, and you hear stories about people who wake up and say, oh my God, I remember that I was, you know, abused as a child, these things. But no, like it's been so far beyond those things that I couldn't have been a Ukrainian war victim. You know what I mean? I couldn't have been, you know, all of these things. I couldn't have been a Russian bot. All of these things, right, that I've been right about and active on. I'm on record, on the public record of social media, that I've been right about all of these things. I can hardly remember something I was wrong about when it came to the major things and the major stories, these Project Mockingbird stories that I've been right about all of these years. I can't really see any other way around it, you know, besides definitely being able to decipher what's going on when most people can't. I can't really explain that.
Well, you know, what I think is kind of cool is it wasn't just you, me. There were people all over the world that became aware around about the same time. And we were like kind of
agreed,
all strategically all over Canada, Australia, the UK. We're all waking up at the same time and having our voice where we're strategically located. So it's not just one crazy person, you know, over here. Everybody, and it's, and everybody is, has a foot in into the social media that kind of mushroomed to where we're all that kind of connected, and it's become a movement. In a
collective is coming together.
A cool club, you know.
It's like the sacred fire, like the eighth fire, the Anishinaabe way of talking about the beginning of the fifth earth and ascension. And it reminds me of when we were at Standing Rock and everyone from all over the world, you know, over 800 tribes represented and, you know, like groups of people from everywhere. And even when they weren't there, like we were all like connected and working for the same thing, you know, and the elders were talking about how that had lit the eighth fire. And now, like, we all have the spark and the ember of that fire, right, all over the entire world. And so everybody was going to, like, start to wake up. And it really is what's happened. But now instead of, like, embers everywhere, you know, it's like this blazing, raging, really beautiful fire that's about to take out all the evil bloodlines. And I'm so stoked.
Oh, I love that. Because that's
how we made it to the
good
place.
Right? Isn't that how we met, Lily, is Standing Rock?
Yes.
I never went to Standing Rock, but I checked in there. You know what I mean? Like I furthered the cause. I had a following. I checked in, you know, and it's funny too, because there was this guy who's local. We got married at Joe and I got married at his house, which was this gorgeous historic monument, whatever. Raging lib. Don't even really like him much anymore. But he was like, oh my God, Dan, you went to Standing Rock? Really? She checked in there, right? This guy was like, oh, really? She was there? That's amazing, right? Very much liberal. And to me, that was like a big thing because, no, I didn't travel there, but my energy went there.
And you were there in spirit.
Right. My spirit went there.
Your spirit was there, you know, like, and that's huge. And it opened up, you know, humanity's hearts, and it really put our sacred circle of humanity back together, you know, like our medicine wheel that represents all of the colors of the different nations and tribes that were all created by the same creator at the exact same moment, and then we're sent away from each other to learn different things to then bring those things back to the whole circle again, right? And except that we got, you know, invaded and we forgot to come back to each other, but we've remembered now, and so we did, and we restored the seven fires. We lit the eighth fire. Like, we did so much more than we realize sometimes, I think, because, you know, like, it didn't necessarily end the way that we had all, like, thought that it would, right? But it doesn't matter. Like, it was the biggest victory, I think, that we might have ever had to date.
I Absolutely agree. And that's why we're still here right now having this conversation years and years later. What was that, 2015, 2016?
Yeah, it was forever ago. It feels like another lifetime. You know, I mean, it doesn't. It feels like it was yesterday, and it also feels like another lifetime both at the same time.
Right. That's that
really
time
crazy
traveler thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so I really do think that what tribe was that?
It started with the Lakota. So the youth runners from Cheyenne River Reservation, which borders with Standing Rock, and also Standing Rock, ran to Washington, D.C. to demand that the pipeline be taken down. And, like, the youth started the movement. They came up with everything. And then the elders showed up first and then asked all of the people to come. And so we did. And then, of course, you know, like, people came in spirits and on social media. And I keep having, like, dreams about lately, like, Oshete Chacon Camp. And I don't know, like, I think it would be so beautiful if we could make Standing Rock happen again, except not be fighting against anything this time, but, like, build a community like that, right, on tribal land that's, like, protected from jurisdiction issues again. But we are not standing against anything, right, or fighting anything. We're just showing our solidarity and creating community all over the place. It doesn't have to be one location, but with each other, right, where we've got, like,
yeah,
compost toilets and bikes that you can ride to charge all of your devices and all the stuff, and then people wouldn't have to live there, but, like, the ones who wanted to could, and other people could check in. And it would show the world, I feel like, that we can do everything that we want and need and have everything we want and need without their systems and their 9-to-5 jobs that are soul-sucking that we hate, you know, and, like, all of these really restrictive bullshit things that are only for control. We could actually take everything back, and we could have, like, the clean energy that everybody talks about and wants, right?
Yes.
And balance with Earth again, but in a better way without their stupid pretend green deals and systems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be, like, the counterbalance to how we counteract the way that they've, like, used the ecological movement, you know, like, to terrify everyone into giving away their rights because Earth is dying, which is, like, really ridiculous to even think. I mean, she's so powerful, she would just, like, flick all of us off before dying, you
yeah.
know? But that's not happening either. But anyway, like, it would be a great, I think, counterbalance, you know, to, like, Greta and all of these different
yeah.
things if we mm-hmm. just took it back with each other.
And what did
and,
George
you know,
Carlin said? That maybe Mother Earth wanted plastic, so he created us.
Right.
That's funny. Interesting.
It's funny to me the audacity that people have when they think that, like, little humans, I mean, we are powerful because we're co-creators, but still, when they think that humans could actually destroy our entire grandmother Earth, you know, like,
yes.
that's pretty silly to me.
My uncle said, can you imagine the arrogance that, because he wasn't buying into it either. He goes, the Earth has been here forever. We're just uplifted. The Earth will be here after we're gone. And that kind of blew me away. I was like, I guess you're right. Now, there was an awakening, and I want to say it was in the late 80s, where all the leaders of all the tribes earthwide got together because they started seeing the signs, the white buffalo and the white leopards, and that was the beginning of this all happening. And they had
yeah.
Do you remember that?
That was before the internet, though.
Yeah, but
It was an entire wave of tribes and all of the traditionalists, because there's this, like, a lot of our tribes, you know, have their own division and disputes where they have the traditionalists and they have the progressives,
right.
you know, and the progressives more like one government that they want to, like, assimilate. But all the traditionalists
yeah.
from tribes got together in the 80s and started teaching and reaching out, you know, to, like, all of the different groups of people to bring them in,
like,
and invite them in, you know?
Worldwide. This was the
yeah.
worldwide. All the, and that was the ushering in of this. And there have been different groups, like Michael Tellinger has his Ubuntu movement where they have communities throughout South America and Africa where they're living the way that we're supposed to be living. And
yeah.
it's working. It's like It's been happening. Little
is the community in pain like that too?
Yeah, and it's not. It's been catching on, and it's the fire was lit, and little by little, it's just simply is not.
I feel the same way about the satanic panic, right? There was this truth, you know, obviously what we're talking about is a little bit more, at the forefront, more how we're going to save humanity. But, you know, as far as getting the information out, the satanic panic was, you know, pushed to the wayside, not really spoken about, but it was a massive truth that kind of caught on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
absolutely.
And once you realize that the system that was created for us by the government, by the the negative bloodlines, the reptilians, are really not supposed to. That's not how we're supposed to live. And what they're doing to create these things are so detrimental that it's amazing that we've got this tribal. A culture there waiting for us and helping us to remember how we're supposed to live.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah. I think the 80s was a really like awakened time without technology behind us. There was no real way to tap into the collective on a major scale before now, before, you know, maybe since the 2000s and beyond, really, even since 2015-16 was the biggest furl of this awakening, and I look forward
to the process of the awakening and the timing of the technology. You know, we think that the internet is just full of kitties and food and whatever, but it became a lifeblood to everyone getting together. So it's almost like the technology kind of backfired upon them.
It did.
Control us. Everything does.
Yeah, and it's amazing how even in the time of trying to ground us all up into our own little prisons in our home, people became connected with, the uprisings and the movements to combat this tyranny in it.
Absolutely.
In England and Australia. And it just gave everybody a way to stand up and feel their own power. Because you could see,
as a collective,
you could see
they tried to take the power away from us.
People,
this was a huge power push to take away our energy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it backfired on them.
It certainly did.
Everything they try always backfires, and I love it. And I think it's a good reminder for all of us, just how pathetic and weak they truly are, even when they seem bigger, because they can't use anything against us. We turn it around.
And
everything that they
push,
invert, we flip to the right side and use it for good, Because that's the true human nature. They've convinced us that human nature is, evil and aggressive and bad and destructive and all this shit. But that's the projection of what they are. Human nature is actually very loving and very conscious and very beautiful.
Yep.
They just projected onto us so hard that we were them that, some of us were led to believe that we were and just thought humanity was bad,
Absolutely.
But it's not. And I think that's a great testament to how, what our nature truly is, because if our nature was anything like they say it is, then we wouldn't be able to transmute everything they do and use it for good,
The bigger push. The harder they push, the harder we win. You know what I mean? They think that they're going to defeat us, but we just match them with more than they can dish out, and it's beautiful. So, okay, with that, we just hit the 30-second mark.
Your connection's not good, Daniel. There's something with your wire. You're in and out.
Oh, I'm
I love you guys.
I love you so much. We have got 10 seconds left. Please share this if you can. We love you, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.
God wins. Love you. Bye-bye.